Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Goody. It's showtime again. It's a minute past the hour here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Proof positive of such by made by virtue of the fact that there's still daylight outside the studio. And this will be, program note, this will be the last show for this week because I am on the road tomorrow. I'm heading for D.C. after all. But you know what? I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it for y'all. No, I'm not doing it for y'all either. I'm doing it for us. Because there is a significant protest scheduled for Saturday in Washington, D.C. People of goodwill gathering to demand a vast majority of the American people want, namely for President Obama to get us the hell out of these filthy little wars that George W. Bush started. We did not elect Barack Obama to be a policy extender of the Bush disaster. So there's a coalition including Vietnam veterans, Iraq veterans, veterans of all stripes, gathering tomorrow, or Saturday rather, in D.C. to demand an end to the war. And I'm going to be there. I'm not a veteran. No, all of what I am is a member of the so-called new media, a practitioner thereof. And I'm going to load up some very, very lightweight, technology. And I'm going to go and stream it live. Now, I don't think we will have an audio stream on the horn. But if you know how to get to the Ustream channel for the horn, it's just look up Head On with Bob Kincaid and you won't have any problem at all finding it. Head On with Bob Kincaid. You will be able to watch the protest as it unfolds. And you will be, and you will know that you are watching not some corporate hack, some minion of a transnational. You will be watching the events unfold via a network that you yourself have built. I'm leaving here early tomorrow afternoon, driving to D.C. and catching some Z's, and then getting up and doing it on Saturday. I think this is a fitting and appropriate use of horn resources and horn time and horn energy, because you already know, I already know, we already know, that there will not be any meaningful coverage of this by the transnational for-profit media, because it doesn't fit within the mold of how they want people to perceive the world. So if you go to, and I'm loading up with low impact technology, and I think some good things are going to happen. The video may not be the best, but it will be video. And I will do my best to make it something that you can both see and hear. You can tell me afterward whether I succeeded or failed. Then I'll get in the car on Sunday and come home. Okay? So that there's that program note. Secondly, the other night I mentioned that I had in my hands the first trial run bar of Horn soap. Yes, you can lather up. The Horn is no longer merely a radio or occasional internet video stream network. No, we've moved into that realm where we are not only a dessert topping, but a floor wax as well. The Horn is now something that can cleanse your body as well as your mind. In a good way. Cleanse your mind. Get rid of all the right-wing filth that sort of leaks in over the course of any given day. Right. So, you say to yourself, how do I get my hands on a bar of Horn soap? Well, here's how it works. I was talking with the ladies at Bubble Genius earlier today, bubblegenius.com. BubbleGenius, Bubble Genius. And here's the deal we've worked out. If you go shopping over at bubblegenius.com and buy yourself some fun stuff, maybe, you know, you want nothing but the tooth soap. It looks like a pair of dentures. Maybe you want king cake soap complete with a little baby Jesus. Whatever it is you buy, when you get into your shopping cart, enter the promo code HORNY, H-O-R-N-I-E, HORNY. No, not dirty. That's just what we are. That's what. I didn't start this. People in the chat room started it. That's how we refer to ourselves. So enter the promo code HORNY, H-O-R-N-I-E, and you will get not only 10% off of your purchase, you will also receive a bar of Horn soap, which I think you will really, really dig. And if you guys like Horn soap enough, maybe we'll start looking at other things. Who knows? The Horn chapstick, or the possibilities are almost endless. And I'm doing this because starting last year at Netroots Nation, we got to meet the folks from Bubble Genius, and they are wonderful, wonderful women. And their soaps are vegan. No creatures harmed. No little bunnies getting soap suds put in their eyes or anything like that. And they got a great sense of humor. No kidding. So we've been conversing and dialoguing back and forth on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, you ought to follow them on Twitter, Bubble Genius. And they wanted to know how they could help promote the Horn. And I wanted to know how I could help them do a little business. And this is the end result. So you go shopping at Bubble Genius and buy you something fun to suds up your hide with. You put Horny, H-O-R-N-I-E, in the promo code. You get 10% off and a bar of Horn soap. How's that sound? Me? I like the sound of that. Horn shampoo, Horn body wash, Horn soap, Horn conditioner. Oh, my God. The possibilities are simply endless. So give it a try, and when you use the promo code, that way they will know where you heard about it from. And we'll show as a group a little bit of our buying power. Everybody, most of us bathe. I'm fairly confident in saying that most of us bathe. Now, you can either go and give your money to the transnational corporations, or in making your choices about how you bathe, you can give your money to a couple of delightful women, businesswomen, who are decidedly liberal, and just wonderful to know and do business with. I know which side we've chosen. BubbleGenius.com. Promo code HORNY, H-O-R-N-I-E, capital H, capital O, capital R, capital N, little I, little E. HORNY gets you a 10% discount off your purchase and a bar of Horn soap. So there's that. Now, how do we get into the bulk of the evening? Well, it is sort of a holiday. It's kind of a religious holiday, isn't it? Ah, yes, it's St. Patrick's Day. Oh, begorra. Aaron Gebrag. You know, St. Patrick's Day celebrates that that time, or purports to celebrate that time, when, and bear in mind, historically, the British oppression of the Emerald Isle began with St. Patrick himself. St. Patrick was not Irish. Let's be real clear about that. St. Patrick was a semi-Romanized, because the Roman Empire had gone into decline, the Empire had left the island of Britain, and they were trying to hang on for all they were worth to a little bit of culture, largely failing. And St. Patrick was the son of a well-to-do British family. He was also a quote-unquote Christian. At some point in time, St. Patrick was kidnapped by, I believe, Irish pirates. Well, we know they were pirates. I'm pretty sure they were Irish. And he was carried off to Ireland. And he took his Christianity, his bigotry, his intolerance, and all the prejudices that accompany Christianity with him. Because at the time, Ireland was still very much a pagan place. And he began preaching and proselytizing, as Christians are wont to do, utterly intolerant of the old gods of the island, and began converting by threatening and haranguing and harassing people into believing in some burning hell and some sort of Dionysian devil. You know, Christianity can't win without, it can't succeed without the devil. It has to have a devil. There's no way around it, because without the threat of hell, Christianity is utterly meaningless. And so, using that tried and true method, St. Patrick began religiously assaulting the native religion in Ireland and the natives who practiced it. Over the years, because he was successful, St. Patrick was said to have driven the snakes out of Ireland. Now, as you probably know, snakes are often associated with various and sundry pagan cults. The mother of Alexander the Great. What was her name? I know she was played by, what's her name? That woman with the great big lips like Mick Jagger. Angelina Jolie. God, that woman's disturbing looking. Sorry, I'm just shallow that way. excuse me. Alexander the Great's mother kept snakes because she was a priestess of some cult that used them. And there were, in pagan cultures, house snakes, and there were places where snakes lived. There was an ancient Roman ceremony involving, I believe, the good goddess Bona Dea, in which women, and men had no part in this, women would go and feed milk to the snakes. I don't know. It's all religion to me. Bunch of hooey. And so snakes are associated with paganism, and when we say that St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, what that means, what is celebrated on March the 17th as we near the vernal equinox. Huh, wonder why that would be. Oh, look, it's another Christian overlay on top of ancient pagan practices. Texas Betsy, as a matter of fact, generally speaking, Southern Baptists don't celebrate St. Paddy's Day. They just, that's, you know, more of that papist heresy. But at any rate, the celebration of St. Patrick's Day is the celebration of the intolerance and bigotry of Christianity. And you know, it's fitting. It's fitting. Because, for instance, in New York City today, where St. Patrick's Day celebrations there celebrated their 250th anniversary. Gay Irish folk were excluded, as they have been in the past, from the celebration of St. Patrick's Day. Me, I have no truck with celebrating bigotry and persecution. But, you know, who the hell am I? A guy with a microphone and an internet connection, you know? In 1995, the United States Supreme Court, by a vote of 9-0, oh, where are those liberal justices when you need them, huh? By a vote of 9-0, the court declared that the private sponsor of the St. Patrick's Day parade in Boston could exclude gay people from participating. So naturally, in New York City, the St. Patrick's Day parade sponsors, known as the Ancient Order of Hibernians, told the LGBT community to piss off, because they said it was a private religious procession. So they're just celebrating St. Patrick's Day in the spirit of St. Patrick, in the spirit of Christianity, in the spirit of bigotry, in the spirit of intolerance, in the spirit of hate. But there was a little bit of light in the darkness this time through. Ireland has a new... And by the way, I say all this as someone who is at least in part somewhat Irish. Now, my Irish may have come from Scotland, and there's an old saying that when the Scottish went to Ireland, they fell on their knees and prayed to God, and then fell on the locals and prayed on them. But yeah, some chunk of the Kincaids, and probably some of the several other the mutts who make up my family background were Irish. God knows Agnes is Irish. Jesus, it's like being married to Marina Hara. Oh, see how easy that comes to me? But, you know, there is a ray of light in the darkness, because Ireland has a new foreign minister. His name is Eamon Gilmore. And he didn't care much for the fact that New York practiced bigotry against its LGBT community. Yesterday, he had what was described as a first-of-its-kind meeting with New York Irish gay community leaders. And he took a swipe at the parade organizers by saying that they fail, quote, to celebrate Ireland as it is, not as people imagine it. Ah, they're always after me Lucky Charms. It reminds me of what I heard Bobby Kennedy say his grandfather had once said about the Kennedy clan's famous Irishness. Bobby Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., quoted his grandfather as saying, "Don't call the Kennedys Irish. We're Americans. Ireland never did nothing for the Kennedys." But at any rate, Eamon Gilmore said, "What these parades about is a parades are about is a celebration of Ireland and Irishness. I think they need to celebrate Ireland as it is, not as people imagine it. Equality is very much the center of who we are in our identity in Ireland. This issue of exclusion is not Irish. Let's be clear about it. Exclusion is not an Irish thing. I think that's the message that needs to be driven home." Good on Eamon Gilmore. Good on him. Ireland has a lot of problems. It always has and always will. As do we all. But it would seem that one of the problems that Ireland doesn't have is bigotry at the highest level of its government. Éireann gabhrá, indeed. Quick trip to the mailbag. Jim chiming in with regard to the protest. Bob, do you really feel that this protest will cause Obama to accelerate any form of withdrawal from Southwest Asia? I have my doubts. Good luck and happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy to you. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you too, Jim. I don't know if anything will move Barack Obama. I don't know if Barack Obama even wants to be reelected at this point. When you behave the way he's behaving, and you come up with obviously risible new slogans like "change that matters." I still can't believe that. I'm still waiting for Sandra to call in and go, "Nah, Bob, I was pulling your leg." Change that matters? I don't know. But at some point in time, somebody's got to get out in the street, because literally upwards of 70% of the American people want to be out of Afghanistan. And now it includes repig lickings. It's like some sort of marketing rebranding. Peace, now with repig lickings. And by getting out in the streets and making voices be heard, perhaps there's some benefit in it. And of course, I have an ulterior motive. I intend to talk to people while I'm there. And I intend to remind them that one need not look 8,000 miles away to find impoverished mountain people being blasted into smithereens by the United States. We hillbillies are getting a little bit tired of being invisible. Now, we use 3.5 million pounds of ammonium nitrate fuel oil, high explosives. The coal companies have even used old World War II munitions to blow up mountains in Appalachia. And that's, anybody, math whizzes, get out your calculators. We use 3.5 million pounds of high explosives on West Virginia. That's not, it's closer to 6 million pounds when you take in Southwest Virginia, East Tennessee, and Eastern Kentucky. But let's just do West Virginia for the sake of simplicity. We use 3.5 million pounds of high explosives, the same kind that Timothy McVeigh used on the Murrah Federal Building, every day. Every day. One more time. Every day. Do you suppose 3.5 million pounds of high explosives have been used on Afghanistan since 2001? Because if it has, okay, maybe 7 million pounds. All right, I've got 7. Can I have 14? 14, 14. We've got 14 million pounds of high explosives used on Afghanistan. Anybody want to go 21? 21. I got 21. 21, 21 going once. 20. No. Because like I said, get the calculators out. Do 3.5 times 365, and you get a year. And that's in millions. Multiply that by 10. Now multiply that by 3. So while we do make the legitimate case that the United States should be out of Afghanistan, there is an equally compelling case that foreigners like SR Company of India should be out of Appalachia. And hopefully we'll talk about that a little bit. Because there's a commonality. As I've said in the past, I feel more in common with a Palestinian than I do with many Americans. Because Appalachia is every bit, not every bit, but approaching the same level of hopelessness as Gaza. We're not there yet, but we're well on our way. I feel a certain kinship with Afghans. Because there they are. You know, it doesn't matter if you speak the 17th century hillbilly English or Pashtun or whatever. Hillbillies is hillbillies. And there's a sort of look right here at your feet aspect to Appalachia. Anybody got the numbers yet? Anybody figured out yet how many millions of pounds of high explosives would have to be used on Afghanistan in order to equal what has been used on Appalachia? So we'll make those noises. We will make those noises. And hopefully have that conversation. Because there's a common thread that runs through the abuse of poor people. I have a sneaking suspicion that there aren't any well-heeled, well-to-do neighborhoods anywhere near the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant in Japan. Those are probably lots of ordinary working-class to lower-class folks. Just like there aren't any well-to-do, well-off, silk-stockinged people living next to the toxic coal ash that gets dumped in Perry County, Alabama. Coal ash that, by the way, might I remind you, is radioactive! And we're not raining death and destruction from the skies on well-heeled neighborhoods, if there are any left, in Afghanistan. We use Predator drones and Hellfire missiles to wipe out Weddings. A time, an event in even poor people's lives when there is celebration and joy and hope. And we use high explosives to blow them up. So I think there's a lot of good conversation to be had. News Ninja Susan. Reminds me, yes, the mother of Alexander the Great was Olympias. She and Alexander's daddy, Philip, did not get along at all. In conjunction with the snakes, our buddy Clayton also notes that there are, of course, Christian snake handlers. You shall take up the serpent, and you shall not be harmed. It's a question of faith. It's also a question of whether you're keeping the snakes in an igloo cooler down at nice cool temperatures where said snakes will feel a real profound urge to get lethargic and slow and go to sleep. K kind of like when the temperature drops below 70 here, and what happens to Agnes. She slows down a lot. Doesn't like the cold. Had to drag her kicking and screaming back from the Caribbean. I don't want to go back, Bob! Right. So that's a starting place for this evening. Now, on to a couple of... Oh, Jim. Jim's in rare form tonight. Bob, the most dangerous snake is the pant snake. Did St. Patrick rid the Isle of those? Well, I suspect he didn't, Jim, or else the church would not have had that horrible, horrible, horrible priestly sexual abuse problem it had. Oh, thank you, Clayton. I hereby deem thee an honorable veteran. I wish. But I always carry my father and my uncle who did not come home from France in my heart. So maybe that counts a little bit. What else? Let's go ahead. Everything I can read, and I got a link from Sandra earlier, pointing out things that you're not likely to hear in the for-profit media, especially from the babbling boobies on TV. It's going from worse to worser in Japan. Oh, what did I hear? What did I hear from the babbling booby head on TV today? I was blowing past CNN on the way to the Mountaineer game. Yes, it's March Madness, and you may have to hear... Well, you've got it... Well, no, because by Saturday, maybe I will have been shut up, depending on how the Mountaineers do with Kentucky. That's another story. But it's March, and March Madness is upon us, and I was anxiously awaiting the beginning of the WVU-Clemson tip-off. I despise Clemson. From a sporting standpoint, just yuck. And I stopped on CNN for a minute where, oh, Jesus, Carol Costello, I think. Isn't she the one that dated Flush Flimball for a little while? Flush, look at that. It's just tiny, isn't it? But she was. They were talking about Japan in very much vacuous terms, and well, you know, it's probably going to be okay that the American embassy's getting its people out, and right, man the lifeboats. But she had some babbling business desk idiot named Allison on, who was talking about where we get our energy in America. She said, well, you know, 20% of it does come from nuclear, and we certainly see that nuclear can be problematic. But we also get a great deal of our energy from coal, our electricity from coal. And this was the line that just lit me up like a Christmas tree. She said, coal is awfully hard on the environment. No, sister! Coal is hard on the human beings! I'm no fan of nuclear energy, but I must point out to you, lest we forget, that 1,000 coal miners die every year in the United States. 3 per day. 1,000 coal miners die every year in the United States at the rate of 3 per day. Of black lung in 2011. No, really. There's that. So there's 1,000 dead a year from coal. And then I think the American Lung Association has estimated that 26,000 people per year, all across the United States, not just here in little the invisible, forgettable Appalachia. Oh, hell no! It happens in Cincinnati, as it happened to Elbert Gervonta Woods last August when he came home from football practice and dropped dead because the air was poisoned with coal filth over Cincinnati. And it happens to 25,999 other people every year directly because we insist upon burning the most filthy, most toxic substance on Earth in order to generate electricity. So now we're at something like 27,000 people dead. And because the work has never really been done, we can't fully estimate how many people in Appalachia die every year from the poisons in their water and the poisons in their air. And I got to tell you, that's a lot more people than die from nuclear radiation. It's just a matter of perspective. And so with that in mind, that's why I started started screaming at the TV when Allison, the babbling bobblehead from the CNN business desk, said, and coal is hard on the environment. But then, I almost did myself out of the ability to do a show tonight. I almost lost my voice. Screaming. Why, you ask? Well, I'll tell you. The next thing that Allison, the babbling bobblehead, at the CNN business desk, said was, okay, so, you know, nuclear certainly can be dangerous, as we have seen here, and coal is awfully hard on the environment, and solar and, quoting, wind and solar are volatile. You know what I got to do? I got to get a clip of Inigo Montoya saying, that word, I don't think it means what she thinks it means. Volatile? Volatile? Wind and solar are volatile? You know, the fact of the matter is, if the tsunami waters had hit the wind turbines instead of a nuclear installation in Japan, yeah, they might have been out of power for a while. Some of the wind turbines might have gotten knocked over. Oh, I don't know. Some solar panels might have gotten washed out to sea. But it wouldn't have required people to drive up with water cannons or fly over them with helicopters to drop water on them. It just would have floated away. Wind and solar are volatile. I don't know. What's the half-life of a solar panel? Do you see how the messaging creeps through our culture via the conduits provided by the transnational for-profit media? Do you see? Well, Bill, you know, maybe we could go for wind and solar. No, I was watching CNN the other day, and Allison the babbling bobblehead said, wind and solar are volatile. I mean, doesn't volatile mean it's unstable? Come on, scientist people, help me with the definitions here. Unstable? God, I thought cesium-137 or 37 or 22... Hike! I thought that was volatile. I thought nitroglycerin was volatile. But a little wind turbine standing on a mountain or sitting out at sea just whoop, 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 whoop. That's volatile? I mean, yeah, it's another one of those moments where you go, you know what? Humanity's screwed. And then there's this article from USA Today, that our blogger Texas Betsy just sent along. Report, safety lapses high at U.S. nuclear plants. You know what that headline means? Report, lots of Homer Simpsons working at U.S. nuclear plants. With all due respect to our buddy Mark, who U.S. nuclear by Wendy, no... K-O-C-H. Wendy Koch? U.S. nuclear power plants operate even with known safety problems because of inadequate federal inspections, faulty maintenance. Oh, look, look, somebody find me a Republican. What? Inadequate federal inspections? Well, see, that just proves that regulation don't work. Faulty maintenance and poor design, concludes a report Thursday by U.S. scientists. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission investigated 14 safety lapses at these plants last year, an error rate that's, quote, high for a mature industry, according to the Union of Concerned Scientists. Its report, prepared before Japan's nuclear crisis began Friday as a result of a massive earthquake and tsunami, is the first in an annual series on safety performance at U.S. nuclear power plants. Many of these significant events occurred because reactor owners and often the NRC tolerated known safety problems, the report said, adding that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission inspects about 5% of plant operations. You know what? If our betters paid their fair share in taxes, maybe we could inspect 100% of nuclear power plant operations. 5%. Well, gosh, that's probably higher than the number of the amount of beef production that we inspect. The scientist's report warns that ignoring safety flaws can snowball into catastrophes. You think? Here's three little examples from the report that just may make the little hairs on the back of your neck stand up. Oconee, South Carolina, or however it is I'm mispronouncing it. Nuclear Regulatory Commission's inspectors averted a possible safety problem by refusing to accept plant operators' rationale for allowing a component in its Units 2 and 3 to go untested after a similar component in Unit 1 had failed. No, you got to test it. Really? We do? Damn. You're probably one of them Yankee tax and spend liberals, ain't you? That's one, yeah. So of the 14 safety lapses at U.S. plants last year, they had a broad range. Equipment failures, like a leaking liner at a portion of the Indian Point facility in New York. Poor employee training, like at South Point, North Carolina, where workers didn't call for help during an emergency because they didn't know how to turn on the new automated system. Ooh, donuts. The incidents occurred at plants operated by Progress Energy, Inc., Constellation Energy Group, Duke Energy Corp., First Energy, Pacific Gas and Electric Corp., Southern Nuclear, Omaha Public Power District, Dominion Generation, and Wolf Creek Nuclear. Sleep tight tonight, America. Yeah. Maybe a busy night. This in from a member of our Council of Concerned Davids. This is David in South Carolina. Newsflash, CNN spotted a fire in Minneapolis today. They still haven't spotted the hundreds of thousands of people in places like Madison, Lansing, or Indianapolis who are standing up for our rights against fascism. Maybe we need to stop using spell check. Ooh, David! You know what he means, right? Maybe if we show up with poorly worded, poorly spelled signs with lots of images of firearms on them, CNN could find it in their hearts to notice that we exist. Yep, no, Sandra refuses to admit that she's pulling my leg. She wants the nightmares to continue. I got a link here to Democrats. Democrats.org, change that matters. Woo! I'm going to cry. Oh, it just goes on and on and on. By the way, as we head to Washington, D.C. to protest one war, it looks like we're going to get another one. Because the United Nations today approved a no-fly zone over Libya. Well, somebody call Major Kong. and see if he's up for a little overflying. You know what I mean? Yeah. Dang, fella could have a pretty good time in Vegas with all this stuff. So, we're probably going to start bombing the snot out of Libya. Can I just point something out? You know why the Egyptian Revolution worked, or worked as well as it has thus far? Because they were nonviolent. And yes, I know. I know. That Gaddafi is a vicious killer. But you know what? After the in the late 1940s in India, so was the British Empire, mowing down peaceful Indians with machine guns. It happened. And there's only one way to respond to that kind of violence. And here's the hint. It's not by using more violence.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed, Dimitri, and remember, there's just one thing. We are all in this together. We're right behind you, Dimitri. We're with you all the way. Yes, well, we'll keep the line open. All right, Dimitri. General Turgeson, is there really a chance for that plane to get through?
Mr. President, if I may speak freely. The Ruski talks big, but frankly, we think he's short of know-how. I mean, you just can't expect a bunch of ignorant peons to understand a machine like some of our boys. And that's not meant as an insult, Mr. Ambassador. I mean, you take your average Ruski, we all know how much guts he's got. Hell, look at all of them Nazis killed off, and they still wouldn't quit.
Can't you stick to the point, General?
Well, sir, if the pilot's good, see? I mean, if he's really sharp, he can barrel that baby in solo. I mean, you ought to see it sometime. It's a sight. A big plane, like a 52. Vroom! It's jet exhaust, flying chickens in the barnyard.
Yeah, but has he got a chance?
Has he got a chance? Hell yeah.
Oh, you ought to see them planes flying over the Libyan desert. Vroom! Yeah, just like flying chickens in the barnyard. Hooray, we're going to kill some more brown people. And here's the fun part. We are not going to kill Gaddafi. We're just going to kill the brown people who were too scared to stand up to Gaddafi. Michael in Sebastopol noting, no fly zone. First I've heard of that. Goddamn, cakewalk to Tripoli. Hooey! And we're going to take out his tanks. Because them tanks ain't got no people in them. Well, I mean, they got brown people in them, but who gives a shit, huh? That's why God would have made a brown people if they were supposed to be giving a shit about them. Yeah. John Fox noting the no-fly zone. Jim reminded me it was passed, and John notes that the no-fly zone passed 10-4, and no abstainers and no vetoes. Here's a hint. The Belgian Air Force isn't going to be doing this. Here's another hint. The Egyptian Air Force isn't going to be either. Oh, maybe the Saudis will, because the Saudis like to go in and kill their own. Well, you know, not their own, but God, they're willing to send kneecappers in to blast the living shit out of the Bahrainis. What's a few Libyans? Mm-mm-mm. What a time, and what a time it was. Don't you know? Indeed. Indeed. So I guess that's a reasonable enough starting place for this evening. Why don't we take a little break? Come back after the Green News Report. It's on its way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And then go to your calls if you are of a mind to engage in some straight-up conversation radio this evening. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And a little reminder that we actually, I got to tell you this, we made it to the halfway point of March. We are two, this is groundbreaking. We are 2.5 months in the black. It's never happened before. So now it's all just down, now it's just downhill to April Fool's Day. So hitting the PayPal button is awfully helpful. And much appreciated, and thank you for those of you who have been hitting it, at $10 at a time, $20, $50, $100. It's what keeps conversation radio happening. It's also what makes possible things like what I'm doing this weekend, and on March the 21st, the American History Chat Series with Dr. Bill O'Brien that will be coming your way. And in the first week of April, it's very likely we're going to have something very useful to everyone who has a corporate filth merchant in their neighborhood. Coal River Mountain Watch, along with a couple of other groups, is sponsoring something called Citizen Enforcement Training, teaching folks like you and me how to hold corporate filth merchants' feet to the fire. And if all the bandwidth and everything works out, we will be putting that up live on our Ustream channel. News you can use, as it were. Then also early in April, we'll be doing something else. We'll be bringing you a lecture by Chris Hedges, coming back to West Virginia. He was here for Judy Bonds' funeral, and he's coming back at the behest of West Virginia Patriots for Peace, West Virginia Citizen Action Group, and Seneca 2, our good friends, to talk about the real crises that face this nation. All of those things are things that happen because you, $10 at a time, $20 at a time, $50 at a time, $100 at a time, and some of you even more, see fit to make sure that this is available and continues to be available for everyone. Did you notice today, because, you know, I'm registered over at New York Times because I go over there and read a news story now and then. You got to put in your email address and your little password. Well, the New York Times is going to hide behind a paywall. No more free news for you, sucker! The New York Times! And yet, how does the Horn family do this? How has the Horn family kept this going in excess of 5 years? How have you done it? You have done it because you have contributed not only for yourselves, but for everyone else in the hope that we will not only survive, but thrive, and that information will continue to be available to those who want it, and yes, who need it. So thank you. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. There also, you will find the snail mail address. Both ways are fine. They both wind up doing the same work. So thank you very kindly. We'll take a little break. As I said, the Green News Report is on its way. And then your calls to 877-443-2366. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Conversation Radio. This is the liberal media. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
Give me something, something I can use. People love it when is. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Trouble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's Thursday, March 17th, 2011.
We could not delay the mission any further, and therefore we have decided to execute on the plan.
Crisis in Japan. The compounding natural disasters, humanitarian disaster, and spiraling nuclear disaster. Desperate efforts to hold off a nuclear nightmare.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... yes, snarky comments.
Talkie Points believes that the worldwide media is hyping the nuke situation in Japan a bit too much.
Yes, 6 different reactors, each of them larger than Chernobyl, possibly headed towards complete meltdown. Why worry, Bill O'Reilly? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, at risk of bothering Bill O'Reilly, it seems this nuclear crisis in Japan continues to spiral out of control at this hour.
Oh, yes, very much so. But more on that in a moment. First, some important news that is not in Japan. Republicans in the House and Senate are moving fast to strip the EPA of authority to regulate the greenhouse gas emissions that scientists say are causing dangerous climate change. A House subcommittee on energy even voted down an amendment to the bill that would have simply acknowledged the established scientific fact that global temperatures are rising. No word yet on whether they'll vote to declare gravity a myth as well.
They actually had a vote on whether global warming is occurring or not. Not even whether it was man-made, but just whether it's occurring. And the Republicans voted it down on party lines.
Yes, they did. Now onto the crisis in Japan. Heavy snow, cold temperatures, food and water shortages are hammering victims in the 7th day since double catastrophes struck northeastern Japan. The confirmed death toll is now over 5,000. The missing, over 10,000. Those numbers are expected to rise. The Japanese military and foreign search and rescue teams say there is now little hope of finding any more survivors. But world attention is also focused on the potential nuclear disaster.
We believe that secondary containment has been destroyed. And there is no water in the spent fuel pool, and we believe that radiation levels are extremely high.
That was U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission Chief Gregory Yasko testifying before the Senate Wednesday on the dangerous situation in Japan. At Japan's stricken Fukushima nuclear power plant, radiation is so high that workers can't get close enough to continue manual pumping of seawater to cool the overheating reactors. So specially outfitted helicopters used for fighting wildfires dumped tons of seawater directly onto the overheating units. And specially outfitted fire trucks with water cannons have sprayed water on spent fuel pools. But as of early Friday morning Japan time, it appeared those actions were not successful as radiation levels reportedly continue to rise. Keeping those reactors and spent fuel pools cool is essential to prevent a catastrophic release of radioactivity.
The 4 dramatic helicopter water drops onto the crippled Unit 3 reactor were broadcast live on television. It actually appears today that a number of those drops may have missed. Now, Japanese authorities determined that they needed to drop that water onto Unit 3 rather than Unit 4, where Yasko had said the pool had run dry, because Japanese authorities, at least, believe the pool in 4 had not yet run dry, so they prioritized Unit 3. And yet, today, the radiation levels continue to rise, even after those dangerous helicopter missions, akin to the type used in Chernobyl. After that disaster, which was said to have led to the deaths of many of those helicopter pilots.
Yes, and now Tokyo Electric Company officials say a new power line to the plant to restore power to the damaged water pumps is nearly complete, but that it may not be enough as the pumping equipment itself may have been damaged. 20 workers at the plant have been diagnosed with severe radiation poisoning. The Pentagon has announced it is now sending a special nuclear emergency team to Japan. President Obama spoke with Prime Minister Naoto Kan on Wednesday. In addition to expressing condolences, the White House said Obama has promised more humanitarian relief and rescue aid and is also sending experts who specialize in long-term recovery and rebuilding. The U.S. government has urged Americans in Japan to evacuate beyond a 50-mile radius from the plant, more than double the 20-mile radius recommended by the Japanese. Unlike dozens of governments around the world that have told their citizens to evacuate the country. But the U.S. State Department has offered charter flights to Americans who want to leave Japan.
Yeah, you have to wonder who to believe here when France, U.K., Italy, all sorts of countries have told their citizens to leave Tokyo immediately. Tokyo is 180 miles south of the crippled plant. U.S., however, says, well, as long as you're not 50 miles from the plant, you're just fine. Who do we believe here, Des?
It's hard to know. The Obama administration has also said it will continue efforts to promote nuclear energy in the United States. Unlike other countries, China, for example, has ordered an emergency safety review and a halt to all new nuclear power plants, joining a growing list of countries that are instituting moratoriums on nuclear energy development, including Germany, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom.
But we hate to hype this story too much. For more on it, of course, please see our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can follow us 24/7 on Twitter at Green News Report. And, of course, I have been covering this at bradblog.com and my own Twitter account at The Brad Blog. We will, of course, continue to follow developments in this story, which, frankly, we do not think is overhyped at all. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Sorry about the abortive restart of the program. That guy that presses all the buttons can be a real idiot sometimes. I think we'll cut his pay. 9.5 minutes past the hour. We are into hour two of the program. You know what? It's reports like what you just got from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen that make me so value the ongoing hard work of Brad Friedman. You know, he could put on a How to Be a Journalist seminar for all those people who work for the global transnational for-profit media. And, well, yeah, he could, but they'd all just sort of sit there looking at him with their mouths hanging open, and it would. Email just rolled in a little bit ago from our buddy David in South Carolina. Before I go back to the phones, I want to share it with you just because there's so much, well, it is information rich, as we like to say. He says, today's rant from your local glow-in-the-dark Palmetto State. By the way, David is also reveling in the Mountaineer victory over Clemson. He hasn't much regard for the Clemson Tigers either. He's a University of South Carolina man. David says, there's no way the U.S. could handle even one of the emergencies that Japan is battling. I mean, we freak out over a snowstorm in January like winter's so unexpected. And we're going to have a heat wave this summer in South Carolina. Because, you know, heat in South Carolina in summer, that's unexpected, too. Temperatures are going to soar into the triple digits with heat indices approaching 120 degrees Fahrenheit. There's going to be hot, humid days with the humidity making any outdoor activity extremely dangerous. Also a chance of mainly afternoon and evening thunderstorms, some severe. End the Bush tax cuts now if you're serious about the budget. Take out Social Security taxes on all income. It sounds pretty reasonable so far. Raise the tax rate on all income over $1 million per year. Stop subsidies to the nuclear power industry. Roll back defense spending. Pass single-payer Medicare for all. Reduce the retirement age to 55. 1 minute they tell you to remain calm. The next they run to this video simulation of a radiation cloud covering Southern California. Then they say it's not dangerous. The only possible downside would be if it got into the food chain and then people ate the radioactive food. So yeah, that wouldn't be so bad, David. I mean, I reckon some people ain't never seen that documentary, Gilligan's Island, where Gilligan and the professor and the skipper and Ginger and Marianne all eat them radioactive seeds that wash up on the beach, and Gilligan gets smart, and the professor gets all strong, and Marianne and Ginger just get more beautiful. That's what radiation seeds does for you. Jesus. They keep cycling good and bad. That was my editorial comment. We're back to David now in South Carolina. They keep cycling good and bad, calm, panic messages. I'm sure this is to sell advertisements, jack up the ratings so they can charge more for the insurance ads. I think insurance industry runs more ads than any other industry, then prescription meds, and on down the list. It's bizarre. I have to cruise around at multiple simultaneous altitudes and try to keep at least a bare minimum of communication together. It's like the entire political world is engaged in a rope-a-dope, but none of them are falling for it. They're all leaning back on the ropes doing nothing all around the ring. Every once in a while, a stray Palin will scurry out to the center of the ring, then they'll be gone for a while, and it goes on and on. I miss Vonnegut. I'm sure he could see what I'm seeing. We've got 7 reactors in a little state like South Carolina and plans to build 4 more, plus nuclear waste storage sites. We probably glow in the dark. You'd think the radiation would kill off the insects, but cockroaches can survive radiation, so that's probably who will take over South Carolina next. What are you talking about? You just haven't seen them take off the rubber human suits. What do you think inhabits the South Carolina legislature, David? We already have the biggest cockroach to come out of South Carolina in the form of Jim Demented. Yeah, but you got a state house full of them, David. A state house full of them. Let's go to the phones now. Let's start this little thing we like to call Conversation Radio. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, first of all, I hate to bust your bubble, Bob.
Which?
About your ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere back there, you got at least one ancestor who probably had a name, something along the line of Sven or something along.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, right. They only became Irish by going marauding on, or Scottish for that. But yeah. I still carry the gene to this day, Susan, because the only reason they left where they left is they looked around and went, wait, the whole world isn't freezing effing cold like this? Let's go where it's warm and throw the people out and, you know, and they did.
Well, actually, it was even worse than that because your ancestors, like mine, were Vikings, and that means they got tossed off the Daneland Peninsula for being obnoxious. And so they, being the obnoxious sort, they proceeded to rake their way up and down the entire English and Scots and Irish.
Yeah, let's go be obnoxious somewhere warmer.
Yeah, and they did. And had a high old time doing it. And left traces.
Yeah, little blue-eyed jeans here, little redhead jean there.
And tall blonde dudes everywhere.
Yeah, that would have been me once upon a time.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, okay.
Now I'm a tall, white-haired, chubby guy.
Yeah, well, same difference.
Yeah, don't agree so quickly.
And, you know, Agnes, she comes from the same stock. And
oh yeah, I mean her maiden name still carries. I mean that's Norman French, and well, we know who the Normans were. Norman.
I got news for you. We did a little bit of digging. Agnes and I did. There is a possibility that somewhere way back, but you know how the Scots clans reacted to things.
Yeah.
She's not Irish, by the way. She's Scots.
No, there's some Irish in there, too.
Yeah, but anyway, we found her clan, and she's probably related.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least. You know, that's... you know, the definition of clannish is the definition of clannish, and that's clan with a C, not a K, for a reason.
Yeah, that's family. That's the word for family. That's kin. Now, you mentioned, you know, what would happen if, you know, a solar plant got hit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I happen to have that article about the solar tower technology.
Right.
I pulled it up.
Right.
Okay. Have you ever seen a picture of? Okay, you've got a flat panel monitor, I'm sure.
I do. Looking at it right now.
Picture thousands of those. Only instead of an LCD with a picture on it, you've got this mirror flat surface. Those aren't going to be falling over all that easy because they're embedded in the ground.
Well, there's that.
The only thing that's liable to fall over is the tower. And then you bring in a big monster crane and you pick it back up. There is no radioactivity. And what gets me is they're not even considering this, and it would cost probably about the same up front to build it.
Right, yeah. And it lasts, and, you know, then you just do maintenance on it forever.
Yeah, once it's in, you got maintenance, and then it's just free. It's free. And you know how much it would take to generate the world's electricity? The entire world? 1% of the area of the world's, not space, but the world's deserts. 1% of the desert lands. And the U.S. happens to be really, really fortunate. We got lots of desert. Why aren't we doing this?
Well, because...
You
know the answer, right? Sure.
Sure. Because... like I said, once it's in, it's free. There is no recurring cost for them to rake off. And let's face it, an idiot can build these things. The most complex thing is the computer control required to make sure that all the mirrors align up. Whoop-dee-doo. It's all technology. That's all there. It's all perfected. There's nothing new. And then you have a regular old, like the pilot plant that's in Southern California right now. Do you know what they're using for a turbine? A rebuilt World War II turbine. Steam turbine. Yeah, it's not exactly what I'd call new technology, would you?
Well, no, I mean, the ancient Persians invented the wind turbine.
Yeah, all you're doing is boiling water. Let's face it, even if the tower itself fell over, what are you going to do? Get the desert wet. Whoop-dee-doo.
Yeah, I imagine that'll soak up pretty quick.
Yeah, so the desert gets some water on it.
I mean, I was just amazed last year when we were in Vegas, because, and I'm not trying to be disgusting or anything, I perspire.
Oh.
And
in Vegas, everybody does. It's either that or die.
Well, no, what amazed me is I'm standing out there in 114 degrees, and I'm not. Because as quickly as it comes out, it just evaporates into the air around me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I could understand that. But you know what gets me is, so you have some water that is just basically standard water. You can drink it, and you're boiling it. And if a big earthquake comes along and knocks over the tower, it hits the ground, big deal. As opposed to all of that water they're dumping on those reactors in Japan that will be radioactive for the next 25,000 years.
Yeah, because I realize this may make me a little bit of a simpleton, Susan. But I keep it, once the water's all nice and radioactive, what do they do with it?
I don't know about you, but I've been asking that myself.
Where's it go?
I have a...
You know, there was talk about... David in South Carolina was mentioned that scenario they kept ballyhooing on the news today about the radioactive cloud crossing the Pacific. And, of course, they'd bring on their staff meteorologist who'd say, well, you know, 5,000 miles is a long way for a radioactive cloud to have to travel. And I was just sort of struck there for a moment, Susan. Oh, okay, so it's not going to land on the American Northwest or Southern California or anything. It's just going to fall into the ocean. Well, then everything's fine.
Into the ocean where the fish are going, where it gets into the plankton, which are going to be consumed by fish, which are consumed by bigger fish and bigger fish.
Well, you know, all those whales were getting in the way after all.
And eventually they're going to be caught by fishermen, and then people will eat them. And oops.
Well, you know, hey, it's St. Patrick's Day. We drink green beer. Maybe next St. Patrick's Day we'll be eating glow-in-the-dark green tuna.
Oh, we.
Sorry, that was entirely uncalled for, but you'll have that.
Yeah, it's just, is there anything more that we can do to the ocean?
Please don't whisper that question into the universe's ear, Susan. Please don't.
Yeah, I have a sinking feeling. I have a feeling I know what they're going to do with that water and all the rest of that crap, because they're going to eventually, assuming they eventually figure out what to do, they're going to have to eventually disassemble all of that crap, take it apart so it can't go into a chain reaction, and then store it.
Well, I mean, whatever they do with it, it's the sort of radioactive equivalent of the smallpox blankets given to the natives.
Yeah, I have a feeling.
Somebody's going to get sick and die.
Yeah, I have a feeling they're going to ship it off to Yucca Mountain. And they finally came out and admitted that some of these workers are in the process of dying.
Dear God.
From radiation sickness.
Stunning.
Well, we...
No, not stunning. I don't know why I said that. It's sickening, horrifying. And let me just say this, Susan. There's a reason that I do not use words like tragedy to describe this. And I go back to what I said about the shooting in Tucson. The meaning of the word tragedy implies that there was a tragic flaw, which means that there's something that the victims did something to bring it upon themselves.
Right.
So the word I usually use associating with things like this or the Tucson terrorism attack, horror, because it is a horror.
In a way, for these guys, it is a tragedy because these were volunteers.
No, but it's not a tragedy because they didn't do anything to bring it on themselves.
I understand that. But
it's a horror.
I keep remembering the report of this one guy. I think he was less than a week from retiring, and he volunteered, and he's probably dying of radiation sickness.
Well, there was one note that I heard that was read out, a note from a man to his wife that said, "Please live life to its absolute fullest. Think I'm going to be here a long time."
Yeah.
Susan, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And since we won't be on tomorrow night, I will wish you a very happy weekend.
You too, and drive careful.
I sure will. And just kind of keep, I don't know, I think maybe noon is about the start time, so it'd be 9 o'clock out there on the West Coast. I'll try to have some sort of video up, or at least hold the camera out in front of my silly-looking mug and tell people what's going on and what to expect in the way of broadcast.
Hopefully I can get some kind of post up.
All right.
Just be careful. Oh, and they're claiming now that they have a power line into one of the sites.
Yeah, right.
They've been claiming that for 2 days.
Right.
You know, so I'll believe it when I see it.
All right. I know. Take care, Susan.
Take care, hon. Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. A quick email in coming from Gail in Australia, John's better half. She says, a little good news from Japan. Wind farms survive Japan disasters unscathed and are stepping up operations. Despite assertions by its detractors, the Japanese wind industry is still functioning and helping to keep the lights on during the Fukushima crisis. Wow, they made it through the tsunami with no major wind spills or turbine meltdowns or... Jesus. But still, we've got a... babbling bobblehead from the CNN business desk, who's, you know, and wind and solar are volatile. Yo, Jesus. Onward we go. Thanks, Gail. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Oh, God. So, I'm sorry, this is just too much, but did you hear about Donald Trump and he's gone bursar?
Yes.
You know, I mean, the dude said... Okay, he said, well, you may go back and interview people from my kindergarten. He said, they'll remember me. Nobody comes forward. Nobody knows who he is until later in life. It's very strange.
Well, and not only that, and Jim refers to him, by the way, as the Trump with the taxidermist's toupee. He also said that he'd be making an announcement in a couple of months and that he's willing to spend $500 million on the presidential campaign.
Well, see, the worrying thing about this, though, on a serious tip, is he's talking about protectionism. And at this point, that's a winning hand. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
That's what scares me. If he's the only person out there pulling a Ross Perot, we won't be fooled twice. When I say we, I mean most people will vote for his ass.
Yeah, because a lot of people still remember Ross talking about that giant sucking sound.
And he was right. And most people remember, people know that now because all the jobs are gone. So if this fool is going to position himself against the Republicans in that regard and go, you know, totally white, you know, he could stand a chance of winning. Because this country, you know how stupid people are, right?
Yeah, well, yes.
I mean, I'm sorry to go there, but I'm just thinking about it. And I was like, I was laughing and laughing, and I thought, oh, he's talking about China and protectionism. And you know what? That will get some serious votes. Because people, I think, overall are so done with our broken system that just rewards the wealthy, and everyone knows it now. I don't really care about the small minority of people, Tea Partiers and all that, no. I think the majority of people know. Because most people I talk to who are like, oh my God, Sandra, you know, I'm always talking politics, they're like, yikes. But they are even recognizing the sort of schism, you know, with the wealth disparity and stuff. So if someone steps up like that and starts talking about that sort of trade, I don't know. I could be wrong. I think that could be a real problem.
Oh, here, yeah, you want to make it even more terrifying?
Mm.
What do you say he picks as his vice presidential running mate, Ron Paul?
I'm not too sure about that.
Oh, that would give me the hives.
Well, I mean, he's so hideous. Although I don't know who would pick him because, you know, Donald Trump, he got followers across the spectrum. You know, I know some folks who like old Trump, but if he gonna pick that racist, that might knock out the hands of the black people who might vote for him. So I don't know if he would go that route. You see what I mean? I don't know if he would get someone that divisive.
Well, I didn't know he had the any sort of significant following in the black community. So.
Well, I'm not saying he has following. I just mean he's a known quantity. I wouldn't be surprised. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, since you did bring the topic up, I got to tell you, I spent time down at that conference, and I'm not going to name names or anything. I don't want anybody to feel bad. But you know how we've had these conversations about how the black community is still rock ribbed solid behind Barack Obama?
Well, yeah.
Not where I was.
Well, no, I'm not. I mean, I think that there's some cracks in that group, and it may reveal itself in no show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or low show.
Yeah, the same thing that gave Wisconsin Scott Walker.
Right, and you know it should be a real worry for Obama because I understand that there's going to be a certain amount of loyalty, but if you look at the sort of state of the black community, it's pretty horrific. You know what I mean?
Well, without a doubt.
And it's sort of, you get to a point where if you're that decimated, you blowing past Obama, on some level. We'll see.
Well, so is this business, I just got an email in from Joe Ray saying that England and France are announcing that they can get the flights started, the airstrikes against Libya started within a matter of hours.
Yeah, no, France is already, they already talked about they're going to start. I mean, that was like immediate. I'm thinking, oh, dear God.
But, we're not going to sit there and miss the fun.
Well, I don't know.
And so will this play to the cruise missile liberals?
Well, that would. Did you see that thing that I sent you?
Yeah, I did.
Speaking. I mean, listen. They're so excited about it. I mean, this bitch been trying to get a humanitarian. I put it in quotes. Intervention for Sudan.
Yeah, some nice humanitarian bombing.
Right. See, that's their thing. And so I can't imagine that the U.S. is not going to be. I mean, they'll probably be coming straight out of Bahrain. I mean, it's really. I don't know. I don't.
No, I think it's Aviano, Italy.
Italy. Okay. Well, see, I mean, it's so disgusting if you think about the history that I kind of went over it a little bit with Libya, with Italy, and the whole West, and the West is going to bomb some African country. All of it is just really is disturbing to me. I'm trying to see the upside. I just find the whole thing disturbing.
Did you notice that nobody in the government was advocating nonviolence during the whole Libyan thing?
Yeah,
when that so clearly worked in Egypt and Tunisia?
Yeah, no, it's there's so many other things at play because I told you it's like there's so many places in Africa where they could use a no-fly zone. You know what I'm saying?
But, yeah.
It's not happening, and it's just kind of creepy because...
Sudan, Nigeria.
Yeah, Congo.
Congo.
And on, but the other thing that's really disturbing me is, what is wrong with the White House? I mean, seriously, is something extra going on? Because they are performing so badly. I don't even know what's going on. It's so awful. With Obama and his golfing and his brackets. It's like, dude, what the fuck?
I mean, when you come up with the list of the stuff they're not doing.
Yeah, no, in lieu of what's going on in the world, that's all I'm saying. I just don't get it. I'm not too sure what's happening.
Yeah, well, and domestically, here at home, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, crickets.
Yeah, no, it's just, I'm like, yeah, anyway. Yeah, but the Trump, though, see. It's horrific, the whole thought of it.
4 years, well, just 4 years of the hair alone.
Oh, it's horrible, and also...
Wait, how tall is he?
Is he not short? He's not short, is he?
I don't know. I'm not asking that rhetorically. I don't know what his height is. Remember, the tall guy wins.
Yeah, I'm assuming that he's a, you know, normal height. I didn't think he was a, you know, that's why I was, when I was worried about Bloomberg, then I saw him. I said, oh, shit, no problems there. He's like about 5'1".
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, tyrant much? Horrible. When I thought he was that short, I was like, ew. You know, just awful. Now, but Donald Trump, though, it's like some sort of nightmare, the thought of it, though. But this country is so crazy. The other funny story was, I heard it, I was listening to Sam Cedar, and he played some little, I guess that, Palenti, or one of them people running?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, apparently, you know, he's from Minnesota, right?
Yeah, oh, Tim Pawlenty? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but now he's talking with, like, a southern accent.
Huh?
Yeah, I couldn't...
What, South Minnesota?
Yeah, he's talking about something, and the speech is great. You have to look it up because you would find it funny because it's like, hello? Now he's from the South. Because you know how they always got on...
Oh, I love hearing people from the upper Midwest trying to say y'all.
Yeah, you know how they got on Hillary when she was all of a sudden sounding, I don't know what, when she was in...
Selma,
yes.
Well, you know, but Obama did the same thing.
Oh, no, that was...
You know, all of a sudden he went from this to, you know, he was in the pulpit and going to call down the Holy Ghost.
It was like, hello? You know, I said, damn, you putting a 10 on it, aren't you? You know? I was like, damn, reel it back a bit, yeah. Yeah, they slip in and out. It's like, yeah, okay.
But Southerners know. We know our own accent.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on, but yeah, he definitely went there too. But Hillary went there, and that was even more funny. Well, so now we have this guy. He's trying to sound like he got some connection.
He's competing with Haley Barbour. Because Haley Barbour done come up into Chicago and said, "Hey, that Obama, he's got the zeal of a." He's got the zeal of a convert here in the gospel for the first time.
Oh, is that just, he used to be a Muslim, but now, yeah, no, it's never ending with this.
I do love the fact that Haley has a Google problem like Santorum has a Google problem.
Oh, no, that's hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah, anybody who wants to, just go to your little Google bar and start typing Haley space. Barb, and before you get past the second B, you're going to see things like Haley Barbour racist, Haley Barbour civil rights.
No, that is some a wonderful controlled vocabulary. Okay.
Haley Barbour Citizens Council, Haley Barbour license plate, Haley Barbour and watermelon.
Yes, it goes on and on. It's hilarious. And the thing about it, though, I also saw when I read that story, I'm thinking, they said he'll have a hard time changing it because, you know, it's a trade secret of Google. So once again, I'm always, you know, reminding people that the internet is owned, just in case you forget.
Worth keeping in mind.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll just keep it short.
We all need to type in and never mind the stuff that drops down. But my God, if we had an audience of millions, we could all type in Haley Barbour dumbass cracker.
Damn, and have that like open up every time.
Yeah, every time Haley Barbour dumbass cracker.
Oh God, I mean it's good enough as is. I mean he's an idiot. He ain't gonna make it. Is he still trying to run?
Oh, yeah. No, he's feeling mighty presidential.
No, but you know what? You know it's all over with when they put them glasses on, like Rick Santorum. I'm like, oh, now you're wearing glasses? That don't help.
Yeah, that proves he's serious and intellectual and stuff.
Like
Mussolini, who still, you know, she admits it. She wears glasses that don't have any prescription in them because she says it makes her look smarter.
Yeah, well, that's incredible that she would admit to it. Wow, what a freak. She's done, though. She won't be running, right?
No, she's just going to get a pocket full of money, and that was the only goal there ever was. Oh, by the way, bless his heart, David in Maine, what do I have here? I've got here just exactly what you brought up. Haley Bar or Tim Pawlenty vocal stylings. Shall we give it a run? This is from Sam Cedar's show. I hope Sam doesn't mind.
I couldn't help it. Tim Pawlenty, born and bred in Minnesota. You can imagine what he sounds like, just like those strange people in Wisconsin. Hey, Badgers, hey. Hey, how you doing? I can't even do it because I speak the King's English, and I don't have such a twisted accent because I come from Massachusetts, where we look at those weirdos from the Midwest like they should be looked at, like freaking weirdos. So anyways, but here's this report from local public radio.
Yeah, ain't going to be no more local public radio.
In Minnesota. This is just so funny. We've earned it, folks. We have earned it. Let's play this.
Last week, St. Paul architect Mike Cipina was getting his daughter ready for school when he heard this on NPR News.
We had the first and only government shutdown in the 150-year history of my state on my watch.
Cipina couldn't believe what he was hearing.
And I thought, wait, is that Pawlenty? And then someone did identify him as Pawlenty, and I didn't understand where the accent came from because he sounded like he was from Arkansas.
I unallotted nearly $3 billion out of the budget by myself, which I think is more unallotments than all of the other governors in the history of the state combined, previous to my time as governor.
Pawlenty, who lives in Eagan, is from the South. South St. Paul, that is, but people there...
Oh, dear God, you know, he's making that mistake. He thinks if he flattens them eyes out, he's going to sound all cornbread.
No, that guy is
my state.
No, he don't got no charisma at all. He's like the he's terrible. Is he a front runner?
No.
Well, you know, a couple of months ago, you know, I was saying, I don't see how anyone can beat Obama, but I'm, like, wondering if dude want to be president. What's up? What do you think?
I think somebody, we've got that split in the White House, Sandra, between those people who want him to do one thing and the other people, who, in other words, cut the hell out of Social Security, and the other group who want him to win the election.
No, if they pull that stunt out the hat, there's no way he's going to take all the Democrats with him, actually. That is, like, such a scary prospect, not just because it's going to hurt people so badly, but it's going to destroy the Democratic Party, because why the hell would you barely want to vote for him as is. And if they do that trick, what's left?
Not damn much, but see... When you're looking at a field that consists of Haley Barbour and Watermelon and Rick Santorum and the Tim Pawlenty and Mike Huckstorby and the various and sundry other freaks, Sandra, you look at that and you go, how can I lose?
Well, that's what I'm saying, and it's just sort of like another one that could, like, pop up, like, I don't know what, is that horrible... really awful, who scares me and scares my nieces, because I showed him to them. They're like, Chris Christie.
Oh, he's speaking of awful, awful Republicans, we're learning more and more about this LePage creep from Maine.
He don't sound, that sound real terrible. Why, what's the latest?
Oh, he's a real joy.
But I know he wouldn't talk to the Nignogs. What was the other one?
Well, last night he went up to Lewiston, Maine, and he's a teabagger and everything, and he was talking to, now, this is straight out of How to Win Friends and Influence People, right? So he's talking to a group of French Canadian Mainers, because there's a lot. I mean, that's a significant significant demographic up there. Common border with Canada and a lot of French Canadians. A lot of people whose names end in IER and whatnot. Well, in talking to him, he says, when I was a little boy, about 12 years old, I'd hang out in the French Canadian part of town and steal Halloween candy from children. Isn't that awful? And now I'm governor of Maine. No, he laughed.
What? Oh, wow. I mean, that's enough to get somebody...
Okay, but here's the fun part. I don't know if you were listening to Malloy last night, but he was talking about this crazy woman in Missouri in their legislature. I'm sorry, not crazy. This mainstream, typical Republican woman in Missouri.
Child labor business?
The child labor stuff? Yeah. Well, LePage, and I believe I heard Malloy say, this isn't going away. This will be back. Well, guess what?
Because hers is dead. Don't tell me this fool is doing something like that.
I read you directly from what Think Progress wrote. But now that LePage is governor, he's still targeting children. A bill sponsored by State Senator Deborah Plowman, Republican, and backed by LePage, would roll back the state's child labor laws with the pretext of giving kids more liberty to work. We have no other restrictions on any other things they do, Plowman explained. They can watch TV 32 hours a week. Supported by industry groups including the Maine Restaurant Association, the Maine Innkeepers Association, that's all during a public hearing Wednesday in front of the Labor, Commerce, Research, and Economic Development Committee. The Restaurant Association's Dick Groton said Maine's law penalized employers. Do we start drinking now?
But listen, when Malloy mentioned that about 1918, I'm like, God damn it, they Lochner. Who was talking about Lochner like it was in the past?
I'm so proud of the fact that you bring up things like Lochner on this program, and people run off to that's LOCHNER run off to Google and holy crap!
Listen, when I read the book, I just stumbled upon it. Don't get it straight. I stumbled upon it and I read the book about it because I was doing the research or something. I said Lochner. Then I started reading about it and I thought, oh dear God! And I found out it was a whole era and what it
privity of contract, and you can't organize.
Right.
You can't form a union because that violates the sacred sanctity of privity of contract between individuals, the individual company, and the individual poor bastard trying to work to make a living.
Right. And so, it's just obviously it just stuck with me because I was just real wide-eyed and real scared. And now I'm scared again because... He said the kids need liberty. He associated liberty with...
Well...
I mean, when they come out, when they use that word, it has so many different meanings. The religious connotation of it, and then there's the free to starve and have your kids work,
But they've liberalized the bill. They've liberalized the bill, Sandra, because it's been amended now to make sure that children can only work 32 hours per week.
No, listen, this is just, oh my God, I'm just shocked.
I know.
Because they're going after the children now? you got a quarter of them poor, so I guess you can actually get...
Well, a third of them are going to drop out of high school anyway. They need to get a jump start on it, because, then if they're working when they're eight, they can start contributing to their individual retirement accounts, and they won't need that Social Security.
And not only that, but since, we're going to market-based our public education, we're going to have so many of them, we can reduce the prison population because they'll be working for $2 an hour. Watch out for your state. They'll be back in the mines.
Yeah, they call them trappers. They open the door for the mules. And, yeah, we'll go back to mules.
Listen, I really can't be flippant about this. That's shocking, because I did listen to Malloy, and I was sort of shaking my head when he said it'll be back, because I didn't want to believe it. But, wow.
I about fell out of the chair.
Where is this bill? I mean, do you know what stage?
Yeah, it's having hearings.
Okay, so they're having hearings. But you know what's really disturbing about what you said? Was when you said the people who are supporting it, God, I feel sick.
Yeah, because they can't make a profit paying waitresses $2 an hour and telling them to make it up in tips.
No. Oh God. I don't even know. I mean, what's the makeup of Maine? Is it just gone total Republican?
They got two Republican members of the Senate. They got them a teabagging governor. They've got a few Democrats left sitting around.
Well, that horrible senator who replaced the reactionary from Utah who's in the Senate, He's the one that is in support of rolling back federal child laws. I forget his name.
Yeah, because he replaced...
He replaced somebody who was fascist enough. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Listen, when is home bitch from Alaska going to become a Democrat? Because you know she bitter. Because she already voting with the Democrats on some things. I said, oh, shit, she bitter. No, so I could be wrong, but she ain't looking right.
No, Lisa Murkowski?
Yeah, she's sort of, she's like a bit, yeah, she should be. She saw what they, anyway, that NPR shit ain't going nowhere, Bob.
You know. But they sure had a high old time doing it. And
but I can't imagine that, yeah, I mean, unless Harry Reid is, yeah.
Well, the Senate has a companion bill that cuts $50 million out. I think $50 million out of NPR's funding, or $5 million, or what? But yeah, they've already, and that's the Democratic Senate. So what? They're going to reconcile these two things? Because remember, this is all tied up with legislation to keep the government going, isn't it?
No. I understand, and Didn't Obama come out with some mealy mouth about, oh, we don't want government every week or something real crazy?
Yeah. By the way, the real hit parade line out of the NPR debate was the Repiglican who stood up and said, you know what? NPR is not very Christian.
Oh, you know, you lying now.
Nope.
Making that up.
Nope. I got an apoplectic email from Jim earlier in the day.
Listen, you know, that reminds me, I wish somebody could find Virgil Good. I could hear that. You know, remember that guy?
Yep.
Virgil Good, and my other favorite senator was from either North Carolina or South Carolina. He was a Democrat, though. He was always talking about there's so much consuming going on here. Holland?
Yeah, Fritz Hollings from South Carolina.
Right, but no, these people are crazy. It's not Christian.
Let's see, 4:49 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, email from Jim. Can you believe these assholes? NPR non-Christian? What the? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, as if NPR isn't center-right.
I didn't know it was radio. I didn't know it was supposed to be Radio Free Jesus.
I don't know what.
All things considered, brought to you by a generous grant from the Savior of the Universe, Jesus Christ Himself. Visit Jesus.org.
No, listen. I'm still waiting for that freak to retire. What's his name? That Prairie Home Companion. I need for him to fucking go away. Apparently not until 2013. I'm like, dude, now please. Garrison Keillor, that guy.
And that's the news from Lake Wobegon, where everybody's white. Yeah. And no one wears their pants around the halfway mark of their hind end.
He would have the damnedest people singing. You know, I always thought I was in some sort of, you know, just a nightmare when I was trapped listening to that. It's horrible.
And now the Lutheran harmonica and Jews harp choir.
I knew you would know it. I know. I don't even know what to say. That, yeah. Anyway, there was an article about him talking about retiring. It's like, tomorrow would be fine, you know? And what is the other show that everyone always goes on about? This American Life?
Oh, no. Today they were having a conniption over Car Talk. Summer. Because I guess it's so cute to mention. Click and Clack. Mm-hmm. Click and Clack were bandied about the floor of the House relentlessly today.
What was wrong? What's wrong with Click and Clack?
Let's see. Summer Piglickin said, well, I understand that everybody likes Click and Clack, but somehow I don't see it as one of the central missions of our government.
they only get 10% of their funding from the government, and the rest of it is
under. Oh, I know. And did you did you see the kittens with crocheted tails birthing from the right wing when that one Democrat offered an amendment saying we got to make sure that no funding goes to Fox News neither?
I know. It was
funny. Oh, that thing plummeted from the sky like a paralyzed falcon.
No, it was funny when that, is that the same one who was talking about, well, Fox be, you know, accusing Obama of being racist? He ran off his list. It was hilarious. You know?
And then Anthony Weiner said, congratulations. With Americans out of work, the economy tanking, Japan melting, the Republican majority is in the House today, protecting America from Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers. Well done, folks. Well done.
Weiner, right, until Israel starts bombing the hell out of somebody, then he'll disappear.
Well, no, then he just, oh, wait, the check cleared, and, you know.
But no, so you saw that, I tell you the slogan, I wasn't making it up, right?
No, I saw it. Change that matters.
It's so ugly. It's like a bullseye. I'm like, hello?
It looks like a web page my son designed.
I was thinking more about.
I used to come in here, and he'd have new horn logos as my background. I'm like, what the is that? Son, I'm old. Don't screw with my world.
Right. Anyway, I'm like, yeah, exactly. I'm sure your son could do a better one. That's the thing at this point.
Change that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the problem is that encourages people to come up with a list of change that didn't matter.
Well, you should see.
Employee Free Choice Act.
To Hannity, and they were taking a piss out of it.
Why do the other sides work for them? I don't get it. Yeah, shoot.
I don't know. I'm just thinking change that matters. Oh, they just went off the deep end. You know.
Closing Guantanamo. Change that didn't matter.
You know, it's like, but. He go about to do some change that matters, and they start bombing the shit out of North Africa. I guess that's a distraction.
I don't even dare go there. Because wag the dog, huh? Because I remember when the Republicans did that to Bill Clinton, and guess what? They'll do it again. Because as long as it's a Democrat doing the bombing, No. The Republican Party going to turn into they're going to have hair down to their shoulders and beard down to their belly buttons overnight. And they're going to be all peaceniks. Remember when they attacked Clinton over it? And not to say that it was the right decision, but, I forget which repig-licking it was who said, it was Trent Lott, wasn't it? Or was it Cat Killer Frist?
Well,
one of those ass hats said, I do not have to support the president to support my troops. But by God, that all went away in 2001 and 2003. My God, look at the anniversary coming up. It's still March, right, Sandra?
Yeah. It's all coming. Yeah.
11 minus 3, 8 years. We had Hitler and Tojo and Mussolini whooped and halfway to rebuilding the entire world by now.
No, but Obama is about to, you know, unleash our military on yet another theater. That's what, I mean, think about that. I mean.
Has Robert, you know, because Robert Gates gave that speech, Sandra. Has Robert Gates, like, lost, has Obama lost his phone number? Has he been taken off a speed dial after that? What?
Well, I think after what happened to Mr. Crowley, you know, everyone's probably backing the hell off because that was pretty scary, what the Obama administration did right there, along with paying that blood money. They're rioting in Pakistan, by the way.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, there have been a few little hiccups behind, you know, letting that boy come home.
We didn't pay enough? Or maybe they just don't like the idea that little Blackwater turds are operating in their country.
Yeah, there's a few protests going on, you know, but it's just kind of like, I don't know, I don't really know, I hope we don't start, I mean, maybe it'd just be France that's doing the bombing.
No, well, England says they're in the party too. No, we are not going to miss this fun. General Turgidson over in the Pentagon is having the first stiffy he's had in 10 years over this. Oh, it is. I mean, that clip I played from Dr. Strangelove. Oh, our boys can fly. It'd be like chasing chickens in the barnyard.
Well, is it true that they put a potato sack on that Manning? Is that for real?
See, that's the problem with all the Manning stuff. Everything you hear about Manning is coming from Jane Hampshire or one of her little tools.
Well, that's not even coming from
And if Jane Hampshire told me it was raining outside, I would go out naked because I would not believe it.
Okay, because that was like the other thing I heard, and I thought, oh my God, that's bizarre. You know, speaking of weeks.
If they are, it is monstrous, and it has to end. It simply has to end. By the same token, however, there is a little bit of a reminder at work here, Sandra, and that is that when you cross something like the military-industrial congressional complex, they will come down on your ass. You know, have we forgotten that Bull Connor had fire hoses and attack dogs?
No, I know. No, listen, I hear about all the hand-wringing about, Mr. Manning, I just flash on the, 10% of black people are in prison in this country. I'll say it again, 10%. So.
Yeah, and Jane Hampshire ain't running around setting up any advocacy funds for them, is she?
Right, and this is kind of like, I don't see any moment from Mabea on her website.
No, and I haven't seen I don't think I've ever seen a big flashing free Leonard Peltier banner either.
But I bet she's collecting some money. Have you revisited that story?
No, because my hip waders are at the cleaners and I just can't go into the swamp.
Oh, shit. No, the
Manning thing is disturbing and sickening.
Oh, no, it's...
And par for the course. And,
yeah.
I hear when I hear the
left getting their panties in a bunch about some indignity put upon, some cause celeb, because in the meanwhile, they just sentenced that torturer, three years in Chicago? That pig?
Yeah.
Hello? I don't see that on Hampshire's corner.
No. That's the more of the cricket chorus.
So anyway, I understand that the Manning thing is like whatever, the whole civil liberties or whatever the whole issue is, and the blowback on Obama and how he's treating whistleblowers. But when we talk about incarceration and torturing in America, I'm like, shit, where are you living?
And most people don't even know, Sandra. That's the whole point. They don't even know.
Anyway.
They don't know where they're living. And I could go back into the Lindy England digression. Remember, she and her pals learned every godforsaken thing that they did at Abu Ghraib. They learned every godforsaken thing that they did by working in the American prison industry.
And, you bring her up, and of course, I just thought about Joe Bajet. How's he doing?
Last I checked, he was home in Virginia.
Okay.
Still undergoing treatment.
Treatment, right?
Yeah.
Treatment, yeah. Anyway, no, he just stopped because I remember what he said about her. And I never forget what he said about Lindy England, like, because she wanted to chase tornadoes.
I am so glad you asked me about Joe Bajet because there's big news.
Oh, okay.
Back in February, they posted that after a month in hospitals, cussing doctors, and wanting to escape, Joe got back home to Winchester, Virginia, and he's continuing chemotherapy. But here's the big news. If you went to Amazon Not America, you could get a copy of a book called Shanghai Road, his new book. It's also known as Rainbow Pie. Actually,
that's its European name? Is that right?
Rainbow Pie is the European name. It was to be called Shanghai Road in the U.S., but it has been posted as of March the 10th. His associate and friend, Ken Smith, said, Joe Bajet was pleased to learn this morning that his second book, Rainbow Pie, a Redneck Memoir, has finally been listed for advance orders on Amazon U.S. The book is listed as temporarily out of stock, even though it's never been in stock for U.S. readers. Amazon U.S. has been shipped a box of Rainbow Pie, and it should be available maybe even as we speak.
Okay.
It immediately rocketed to the bestseller list in Australia, and it's published in the U.K. And
what,
I got.
What's
I'm
the deal with that here. I don't. What? Oh wow. Okay.
But I'm. You know, it's not like I'm not name dropping or anything. But Joe was kind enough to let me read the galleys for this.
Oh, okay.
Sandra, it's a must.
Okay. Well, no, I'll definitely get a copy then.
This thing needs reading, because it's talking about. You know, Joe has the courage to talk about white folks in the way that a lot of white folks don't like to talk about white folks. And he talks about his upbringing in the 50s and 60s as poor, Appalachian, and white.
Oh, no. When I first stumbled upon him, I was just amazed because I was like, damn, he is, he makes Tim Weiss just look polite and pleasant.
Yeah. Well, and this is more so. And there are
okay.
There are statistics inside this book that will just blow your mind. And hey, I'm one of the blurbers.
Oh, okay. On the American version?
No, if you buy the Australian and UK edition, you'll find me saying an amazing read. What Harper Lee had to hide behind fiction to write, Joe Bagent has done straight up with all the bones showing. This is a majestic work.
And so. So now you're saying that it has a printing here now.
Yeah, it should be. If you go and look on Amazon, it should be available.
Let me go order one so I can get one before they all go. Interesting. I didn't realize that it was that kind of party with his book.
I can't wait till he gets to feeling better and we'll get him on the program and for as long as he can tolerate being queried and questioned by me. By the way, I got to throw this your way. David in South Carolina notes, I guess we're just kind of piling on poor little Jane Hampshire now. Hampshire offered no help to us with the Scott sisters case, of course. David is now part of advocating for a full pardon instead of a simple commutation.
Yeah. I mean, that one was just begging for all kinds of coverage, and yeah, exactly. Nothing.
Yeah, there was no Scott Sisters Advocacy Fund and David House whining about the fact that he got dinged for having a bum registration on a military, but no.
Okay, listen, I got it. Oh, no, I have to tell you this one before I go. Okay, there's this, I guess this candidate, Jack Davis, in New York.
New one.
Okay, he said, I guess he's running for the 26th Congressional District, or I don't know. Whatever. He said that Latino farm workers should be deported and inner city African Americans should be bused.
Yes, saw that. Yeah, oh my! I didn't hang the name out with him. But oh my! They're out from behind the baseboards now, Sandra.
Yes.
The door is open. The white citizen, concerned citizen, white councils or whatever. I mean, it's all out in the open.
Well, the thing is, it's just sort of, it's interesting because the sort of destruction of wealth in the black community is just incredible. And so, anyway, it's just like everything's a throwback. So, might as well. Go on.
What the hell? Party on.
I'm sort of like...
Get out the sheets and pillowcases, baby.
No, and then there's a picture here of some black person with a hoe picking up.
That's a hoe with a silent E on the end, right?
It's what I use in the garden, for real, though.
Yeah, okay, sorry. I didn't mean to be such a jackass.
Yes, but no, oh my God. I don't know where I'm living. I don't even mean to laugh. I don't even know what to say about this. What?
Is that de Klerk asshole still alive down in South Africa? Has he applied for, like, immigration or something? You know, the apartheid crowd?
Damn, he must be dead.
But I mean, he'd damn sure be welcoming the teabaggers, wouldn't he?
Oh no, I mean I mean, come on, this is an outrageous. God.
And see, the thing that drives me a little bit crazy here, and I've kept you on the phone for far too long, I apologize. But the thing that drives me a little bit crazy is that we know about this stuff. But how many of our friends, our colleagues, our comrades who are liberal and progressive, no clue? Because they don't participate in this kind of stuff. They're either too busy, they're working too hard, or, you know, that talk radio. You know, it's just not for me. They're too angry.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. I couldn't agree more.
When, in fact, if you knew about stories like this, you'd be in the streets. You would be in the streets. Let's put black people to work on farm. I mean, was there any... I saw the story. I scanned the story. Was there any mention of 40 acres and a mule anywhere? Anything?
No, the thing is, he's saying... You know, because there's, you know, why do you need any, you know, Latino workers when you have all these Negroes unemployed in Buffalo?
You know, I picked up a button while I was in Mississippi. It said, eating dinner tonight, thank a farm worker. But, you know, and you know what? The farm workers, they were talking about, yeah, there are some undocumented, but they're mostly... here legal. There's a bunch of them that are here legally, and they're still picking lettuce.
No, but the thing is, I know, but it's incredible. The thing that's really disturbing me about this is that they, no matter what, these teabaggers, these white people, they can't leave the black folks alone.
No,
it's just like...
Well, last night, talking about that creepy bastard talking about bullying. You know, they can't get into anything that touches on sexuality without eventually talking about, you know, the basic elements of gays having sex. And they get, and I mean, it's like moth to a flame. And it's the same thing with this phenomenon, Sandra. You see what I'm saying?
Well, and then there's with that whole thing, and this is a kind of a different story, but it also bugged me beyond belief. Was you mentioned it about the 11-year-old that was gang raped in Texas?
Right.
You know that actual story. I read this really disturbing article in the New York Times, bringing up all kinds of weird shit, like where was her mother and how was
she that, and Betsy pointed that out to me, that the original New York Times story was just sickening.
No, it was disgusting. It's like, oh wait a minute, we don't what. And when they were worried about the boys and the men who did it, what is that going to do to them? I'm like, what? So, yeah, it was just kind of this acceptance of the sort of sexual, predatory, male thing that seems to be okay.
See, a long, long time ago, when I was doing the terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, I got myself in hot water because there was a little girl in junior high school... And do you know what juicy couture is? It's a lot.
No, you mean them fucking clothes where they have them words on it that little 9-year-olds are wearing?
Yeah. Well,
they have that across their butt?
Yeah, little girl went to school with a pair of sweats on that says juicy across her butt. Okay? And I would never let my daughter out of the house wearing anything like that. Let's establish that right off the bat. But you got the principal sending the child home because, well, you know, he thought she was entirely inappropriate and was causing a disruption in the school. And, you know, just because I'm such a curmudgeon, my first thought is, you know, if I'm mama, I'm going to go and I'm going to ask Principal Whackbottom, why are you looking at my daughter's butt? And it's, you know, it's the same, you know, oh, well, you know, she's clearly dressing to create a rape riot.
Oh, yeah, she deserved to be driven... in some sort of, abandoned trailer and assaulted by...
Right. And after that, we'll just sort of stencil a scarlet A on her blouse, you know, while we're at it.
She had to transfer and go to another school, and the community is worried about their menfolk. And it's just like, what in the world?
I mean, that, you know, this crap, this crap takes Mayella Yule, you know, way out, I mean, way out past the, you know, the furthest reaches of known space.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. And speaking of the New York Times, I guess my homepage will now be The Guardian. Because they're tripping.
I'm not.
$100 a month, $180 a year. They must have lost their damn mind.
$180.
Are they kidding? What about $5? I'm just thinking, good.
You know what? I loved when I got the notice about it. The New York Times is putting up their paywall. But you know who they're trying it out on first?
The Canadians. Yeah, no, but the thing is that it. I'm telling you, that model. They don't. Well, I don't know, because when it gets to be that 21st article, I guess that's the end of my month. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
I don't know. I guess they have to.
Hey, goodbye, New York Times.
I don't think it's going to work very well.
Well, it didn't work the first time.
It's a difficult model. Didn't they try that a few years ago?
Yeah, they put all their op-eds behind a paywall, and that engendered an entire subculture of people who paid for the subscription and then set up a blog and put all the New York Times op-ed stuff, you know, up for everybody to read. And that's what'll happen again. And you know what? Good.
Yeah,
I understand that Dead Tree Journalism is struggling, but Dead Tree Journalism isn't struggling because America is no longer interested in journalism. Dead Tree Journalism is struggling because the New York Times hires the creepy stenographers like Judith Miller.
And that David Brooks, who I guess he's too young to go the same way as Mr. Broder, but.
Well, you know, it never hurts to send a little whisper into the ear of the universe.
Listen, I don't care. I know I'm horrible, but I can't help it. The whole David Broder stuff, I was like, thank God they didn't have a public funeral.
Oh, and I saw Andrea Mitchell just wailing and sitting in sackcloth and ashes on MSNBC. And she had Chuck Todd up there, and I thought his beard was going to fall out. And,
oh, God, they were going on about it?
Oh, yeah. I just hope someday I could be the kind of journalist that David Broder was.
No. Oh, listen, I really got to go, but I have to tell you, you got to see that clip. I'm not a big whatever, what's his name, Bill Maher?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan, but that fool said, poor people, the rich people don't like you. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was, if that had happened during the Bush administration, Bill Maher would have made Bush's autobiography, and he could have been made sad. The way it was made, the saddest thing that happened. Remember the saddest thing that happened in the Bush presidency was when Kanye said, George don't like no black people?
Right.
Yeah, that probably broke George's heart, too, Bill Maher.
Well, that was funny. That whole thing was so funny because of that show. You know, those shows that make me feel sick, the Secret Millionaire. I hate it.
Oh, well, you know what you're going to love? When the new coal mine reality show starts up, if it hasn't already.
What?
Gotcha. Yeah, there's a new reality show that's going to be airing over on the We've Gone Fishing for King Crab, We Cut Down Trees in the Forest and Ski Them In, that, all of that crazy shit. Maybe it's another network. But, yeah, it's all about the lives of people going down under the earth to mine the coal.
Good.
And it's coming out of like McDowell County or Logan County, West Virginia, one of the most depressed areas in the state, one of the most depressed areas in the freaking country. And this is funny. It's a coal mine that's all worked out, that belonged to Alpha Natural Resources that they got rid of before they acquired Massey and sold to a Canadian outfit called Cobalt. So just to keep track, we have the Canadians mining coal in the United States, the Indians mining coal in the United States, and the Russians mining coal in the United States. I can't wait till the Saudis decide they want to get in the coal business. That's going to be fun.
Oh, my God. You know what? That's crazy. The Saudis are just probably start buying up land in the Midwest when it goes,
Yeah.
So that's what they've been doing is buying land up to farm on.
Jesus.
Anyway.
All right.
Terrible. Okay, listen.
Thanks for a great conversation. Have a wonderful weekend, Sandra.
You too.
Bye now. Bye. All right, let's keep it rolling by all means. Hey, welcome to the program.
I know you don't have a lot of time, so I'll be quick.
Okay. What's up, Gary?
Not much. I was listening to a conversation. You know, actually, I was in the store the other day, and they had a cover, and it said on I think it was Newsweek or Time, and it said how Obama lost Egypt. And there was a lady online who was sitting next to me. She just said, you know, they blame him for everything. So I'm kind of waiting now is, when do you think the media and people are going to start blaming him for the radiation leak in Japan?
No, I'm sure, again, you know, if he went over there personally and started spraying water on the reactor, you know what, it'd be his screw-up. But some of that comes with the turf of being president, because remember, to be fair, George W. Pinhead, we blamed him for everything that went wrong. Now, bear in mind that he was responsible for everything that went wrong, but the Republicans are just going to do the opposite. You want a classic case in point, Gary? I'll give you one. Again, this morning, watching the for-profit media, I should know better, some babbling bobblehead on CNN. Here's our question for the day, people. Is it fair that some people are criticizing Barack Obama for filling out his March Madness bracket while Japan is melting?
Yeah, I saw that. I was up early this morning.
I kicked furniture. I mean, golly, Ned, Gary.
But you know where I'm going with it is, I mean, I know that you guys, me, are very hard and focused on Obama. And it's probably, you know, I'm not going to argue whether it's good or bad. But, you know, I've always kind of said that I don't know if it's a really great strategy. Because when I look at what happened in Wisconsin, I look at what happened with during the Scott Brown election. And I've heard Democrats saying, oh, you know, they were so frustrated Obama, they're not going to come out and vote. And then I'm like, okay, well, if you don't come out and vote, then you get Scott Walker. You realize that, right? So my question is, and I'm asking you this question is there a better way to be critical of the Democrats in a better perspective? Because everything that happens within the White House or whatever structure has been centuries old, whether it's the war strategy. I don't know if you had a chance to read Bob Woodward's book, but it's very clear in that book that Obama came in from day one and wanted to push the military back and try to, you know, withdraw and get troops out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, and there's some things that even the President of the United States cannot do. Jimmy Carter's book makes that abundantly clear.
There's a lot of things that the United States can't do. I'm saying there's a lot, in these days and times, Bob, look, the country right now is owned by the corporation. It's owned by the banks.
It absolutely is.
Jimmy Carter said he was surprised when he got in office how much the presidency is not as powerful as people think he is. And Obama, people won't call and say you're making Obama excuses. Not making Obama excuses. What I'm saying to you that if we continue sometimes to focus so much on Obama, 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 we're really missing who the people who are caught, you know, who are really causing the problem, who are the banksters. It can't be because if BP makes a oil spill, we can't start criticizing how Obama responds to the oil spill. We sometimes need to focus a little bit.
No. I got no problem with any of that. I lay it on BP. I lay it on BP's table. But by the same token, there are things that the Obama administration does that are 180 degrees diametrically opposed to what anyone with 10 cents worth of liberal in them would do. Okay.
Exactly.
No, I mean
because the Democratic Party is not. You know, we argue about this, but the Democratic Party is not totally on the left. It's just not. I mean,
oh, it's barely on the left. There's no argument from me on that either, Gary. It's
well, you were talking me down about you said a while about, I think about 2 years ago when I called him with that. You said, oh, no, people more or less think like us. I'm like, no, they don't.
No, the American people did. Not the Congress, though.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Not the Democratic Party as an institution. Oh, heck no. But and if I wasn't clear on that, I apologize. But okay, the Democratic right. But look, the Democratic Party is run by Obama's handpicked man, a wet dish rag by the name of Tim Kaine. Okay, and he is
weak.
Yeah, weak. Thank you, Gary. Yeah, you know. But to get back to Obama for a minute, since that's the focus of the inquiry, I'm not saying this about. I don't say these things about Obama because he's Obama. I'd say it about it if it was Hillary Clinton. I'd say it if it was Dennis Kucinich.
No. I understand that. I'm not saying you. I'm not really saying you because I hear you when you say that about voting. You're going to vote and support him, even though you don't like some of the stuff he's done. Because you know, and we've had this conversation before when you know I said I wasn't going to vote for Democrats if Hillary was trying to steal the nomination some backhanded way, and you taught me into it. As I think about what you said, look, we got to get that Supreme Court. And we still need that Supreme Court. That's why people need to vote, because we just need one more to start getting some, you know, just to keep, at least hold it up to the fort, to the line. But I guess what I'm saying is that when Reverend Wright, he told Obama something that was very true. He told Obama, he said, look, we've been friends and I love you and everything that, but he said, but when you become president, you're going to represent the American government and I'm coming after you. And he was right because Now, because Obama now represents the sins of America, all the stuff that's in place and stuff, even if he tries to push back, you know, again, I tell people, try to read Woodward's book, whether you like him or not. It does give some insight into what Obama's thinking is. And you see that there's somebody on the other side of the goal line. It's not like you just can just run the football down the field.
No. I get all that. Perfect. I get all that. But you know what? Extending the Bush tax cuts, there was another way. But he caved. Okay? And he just did. He caved.
There was an article I was going to send you called David. I don't know if it was David Corn Nation. They wrote something, and I should have sent it to you. I'll see if I can still find it. But after you read that article, you'll see maybe you won't see a different side, but it does show that it might have been probably the best decision to make.
Well, if it was the best decision to make,
Paul Krugman said that the tax cut for 2 years really isn't the big issue.
That's the whole point. If Barack Obama is so politically naive as to think that it's going to be a tax cut for 2 years, you know, I got swampland in Arizona to sell him, a bridge in Brooklyn, and clean water in West Virginia.
But he wasn't thinking about that. When you read this article, what it shows that, because remember, he gets letters, he gets correspondence from people all over the nation who's pleading with him, please, we need this tax cut for us. I mean, regardless of the rich people. And and the article showed that in the end, they said that basically, I guess the person who was close to the article, who was inside the rooms when they were discussing should they fight it or not, said Obama ultimately made the decision that he just could not leave people without.
Okay, what about the closure of Guantanamo? You know, he said very clearly, we're closing Guantanamo.
Yeah, and when do you want him to do it? Tomorrow?
I don't know. He said he was going to do it, and he said he was going to do it in a year.
Okay, what about the passive don't tell? I mean, people were screaming about that about 2 years ago. They said, why didn't you do it so quick? And now it's been done. I'm saying that some of these things are so, look, the Afghan war and all this other stuff, when you get into those type of things, I personally believe, it's my personal belief, and I believe Mike Malloy always says, and I think he's right, that some of those things, we have a third wave of government. And some of those things, you know, you have the legal background. You know those things are just tied in so much legal gobbledygook that you just don't end stuff. Now, yes, he has the power of executive order and to do certain things. Yeah, he could use that power, but he always seems to want to put something into law so that it can't be overturned later on when a Republican get in there.
Yeah, and you know, he's got a far deeper and better legal background than I will ever even dream of having. And he sees, my take, Gary, is that he tends to see things in legal terms. And
that's your vantage point. He has a different vantage point than you right now.
No, that's the vantage point he's using right now. He sees things legalistically. And when you look through those lenses long enough, you stop seeing people, Gary, and you start seeing these aggregate collections of rights and duties instead.
But then what about
the tax cuts? And it's very, very dangerous.
But what about the tax cuts? I mean, according to that article, he made the decision based on what he felt was the right thing to do for the people who really needed help. As opposed to
I don't know who he. I don't know. I haven't read the article, but I don't know who he thought he. I don't know who he thought he was helping, because the tax cut for people like you and me. Well, you, me, working folks. The tax cut was $30 a month tops. Because they were the Bush tax cuts, and at our peril, we forget that the Bush tax cuts were not for us. Nobody being helped by the Bush tax cuts that are the folks that you and I would sit down and have a beer with, as the saying goes.
No, the tax cuts were more than $30. I think, you know, if anything, I think it was like $200 to $600. I don't know the exact number. But it was more than what you're saying in terms of, especially I know for the older, the elderly people who are paying taxes in versus it. But you know, I don't have like.
And so, but the question arises. And the taxes are going to go back to normal when? What American politician is going to successfully run on the need to raise taxes?
What president is going to run on, like, cutting Social Security? You really think he's going to cut Social Security?
You know, all I can go by is what he was quoted as saying, that if he had his way and everything would simmer down and he could work on what he thought was the most important thing to work on, it would be, and these are his words, not mine, entitlement reform. In other words, Social Security.
In the government, not cutting it. That's what he said. He didn't say. He said he's all. Remember what the whole point was when he's talking about. He's
no, talking I'm talking about something he said in a semi-private conversation that a person reported.
Well, I don't have proof of that information, but I know I've heard him say stuff about entitlement reform too. And what he's always been talking about is that he wants to make the structure of the government the way they hand out. That's where he's saying that it could be overhauled to save money. That's what he's been kind of bargaining with the Republicans about. Look, I'm not defending everything he does because I'm not saying I don't agree with him everything he does. But what I'm saying is that, and I'm not saying again that, you know, that you're doing it or other people, but I do hear a lot from people. It seems to be a lot of too much pushing on Obama when, you know, on everything, you know, not just these little things we're talking about, but everything is his fault. And
well, I don't, I don't.
He didn't get reelected. If you don't get reelected, then what we're going to be talking
no,
about?
No, look, look. Saying, the biggest problem that Obama had between January 2009 and November 2010 was the Senate of the United States, Gary. And if I have ever said anything contrary to that, I retract it, I recant it, and I repent of it. All right. But the Senate of the United States is the biggest problem that America has politically in terms of getting anything done. You know, the House under Nancy Pelosi did a marvelous job getting the Employee Free Choice Act in and out of the House and sent it over to the Senate. And Harry Reid, who looked me in the eye personally and said, in January 2009 and said, I will have a card check bill on the president's desk by summer. Harry Reid, let it die. And he let it die because he had no control over people like Blanche Lincoln and that horse's rear end from the guy with the dead animal on his head from Nebraska, Ben Nelson.
Conrad.
No, well, yeah, I mean, there was a whole bunch of
them. It was four of them. Joe Lieberman. It means it's really like four of them that was just a problem. But I think the Scott Brown thing really stopped us from getting the public option and the health care because they really were moving forward, you know, onto that. But that being said, you know, again, I'm not saying I disagree with you guys in terms of like criticizing Obama because I think everybody needs to criticize nobody, you know. But I'm saying that I hear kind of like two ways where I see people like, Obama's just great and he does everything perfectly and you can't say anything about him. And then I hear other people on the other side saying, well, you know, everything is fault and it seems to be this obsession with every little thing he does, you know, and it's like, okay, wait a minute. It's got to be somewhere. Somebody's, you know, Republicans hate him and then people on the left hate him. Somewhere in the middle is maybe where he is or something.
But well, I certainly don't hate him. Most of the time, I pity him. There's stuff out there that's just sort of, I don't know, maybe naive. When you're on the campaign trail, Gary, and you say, and if a worker is on a picket line, I will put on some comfortable shoes, and I will go and march with them.
That means he's running for office. He's not going to go, the president's not going to go stand on the side of the union.
Well, then, you know, then don't say it. Don't say it.
But he wasn't even president. The guy didn't know. I mean, he's just running. That's what the president, I mean, people do. I see people put that little thing up. That's ridiculous. He shouldn't be out there on a picket line in Wisconsin. Wisconsin people doing what they got to do. I mean, the bottom line is sometimes, see, here's the problem with this whole thing with Obama going out and standing on the front line with people. Then it becomes all about Obama. You know, I don't too much agree with Howard Feynman, but he really pointed this out quickly. That then it's like, okay, it's an Obama thing. The people in Wisconsin had to stand up. The Republicans already had the card because the people who were screaming about Obama didn't come out and vote. Okay, so now you get what you probably might have kind of backwardly wished for. You got a Republican in there, now he's screwing you. So what they're doing now, they're organizing, they seem to be collecting a lot of money, and they're going to recall some of these guys. My point being is this. There's a woman I saw on MSNBC, and she said, this is the first time, you know, I voted all my years of my life. She said, this is the first time, you know, with all these people out here, I felt liberated. You know, and Obama coming out there is like, wouldn't be the thing because, you know, remember the Egyptian thing? They didn't have no leader. It was the people who turned it over.
And you know what? That is a valid argument, Gary.
You know?
But there's...
I'm not saying Obama shouldn't have said more. He should have said more.
As a liberal and progressive, I feel like I've spent the Obama administration under the bus, not at the back of it, under it. And there are a lot of people who feel that way. And it's, you know, it's not because he's not out there. What? How can I say this? Because I want this to make sense, and I want to be crystal clear about it. I don't have at my fingertips the entire litany of the complaints, but they've been there.
And Rachel Maddow does a good job of listing both sides of it. She shows how a lot of stuff he's done. He's like, wow, I forgot all the stuff he's done. But then she shows all the stuff he has done. So, yes, it's a mixed card. Nobody argues about that. But what I'm saying is that the country is in such a, you know, with all the stuff that's going on and Republicans doing so much crap and so much garbage that, you know, politics is the art of compromise. That there's going to be some things that he has to compromise on, and people are going to criticize him for. That's part.
But you have, but before you can compromise, you can't.
Too much.
You can't compromise out of the gate. You've got to stake out a position. And there is a perception out there that says he starts compromising before the battle is even joined.
I agree with that conversation. I mean, you don't have no argument from me. I think he does give up too much from the beginning. You know, you come out. I mean, that's basic negotiation. Everybody knows that. You just go.
And maybe that has to do with the fact that he's a constitutional ivory tower academic lawyer, and not a trial lawyer. Trial lawyers know how to negotiate.
But there's another side to it too. When you're dealing with a jury, and you, as you notice, you understand, but. When you're dealing with a broader mass as a leader, you know, there's a certain level where you have to say to yourself, I need to get certain things done. You know, you have to get certain things done. And if you feel the other side is willing to bet the house to let nothing get done, then there's another equation. And I think that's what he thinks. He says, I have to go a little further than I want to get some things done, to get some relief to people, because these Republicans are hell-bent on destroying the country. Hell-bent on it.
But he can't say that. He doesn't dare say that, because the right-wing megaphone and the noise machine will eat him alive for it. Have you noticed that every time that he spoke up a little bit, there's been 72 hours of coverage of what an angry black man he is? Mm-hmm. So I understand all that, but somewhere along the way, and this is just gut level stuff. This is not intellectualized. Somewhere along the way, I want a little more FDR and a little less Richard Nixon.
Well, let me just say this one thing then. Just look. There was a moment, and I hear you say this certain thing perception that people have about Obama, but I think so many times you're misreading it a little bit, because Obama does slip up every now and then when he does his little press conference. And you remember he had that press conference and he kind of went out on a, you know, and he started talking. And he said, you know, you negotiate with hostage takers. Now, some people were saying that he's, you know, he probably had pre-planned to say that or whatever, this and that. But what he said in the instant, nobody really kind of jumped up about it. He said, okay, he's a little bit rough. But he was really understanding at that point. Obama knows who he's dealing with. It's not like he's not even walking into the room, and like he knows who the Republicans are.
Explain to me then, and I'm sorry, but time grows short. Explain to me then, Gary, why his administration is out front rah-rahing the hell out of the nuclear industry in the United States while Japan's melting.
Because it's the United States of America that's doing it. It's just not the administration. It's the whole machine. That is doing it.
It's the nuclear corporations that are doing it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And he doesn't dare stand up to them.
He can stand up to them by saying, look, let's do green. We'll go green. We'll see how this works out. If the green does well, then I'll prove my point, and then I can start pushing back.
Then why does he run around saying that places like Southern Illinois and Appalachia are the Saudi Arabia of coal?
But he also says we're going to go green.
Right, and that's talking out of both sides of your mouth, because you cannot go green as long as you're fooling around with coal. Because one drop of coal tar will turn every green thing in this country the same color as the coal tar.
Don't good lawyers use a certain level of deception when they're practicing? I mean, that's just a part of, like you said, that's part of the deal. You say one thing, when you go, actually going the other way. That's the art of war. You've read the book. You know, that's a part of deception. I mean, it's just like, look at the Chevy.
But see, no,
look at that taking off.
Yeah, I know, but look, I can't.
Why are you giving money to them?
I can't play 11-dimensional chess with this anymore. There's some stuff that has to be done straight up on the front end. And
okay, well, he's playing chess. I mean, I'm telling you what he's doing. He's
well, no, what I'm afraid of is that where the Republicans are concerned, he's playing checkers and they're playing chess.
No, they ain't playing chess. Republicans are not playing chess. Obama's playing chess. He's been playing chess the whole time he's been in there. He's playing long term. He's not playing short term. He never had. Now, you can sit here and talk about the new, you know, coal and all this other stuff. But the bottom line is, there's a certain level of where, you know, they say you can use time as a weapon. Some things you can just sit back and let them reveal themselves. You can come out and say, I'm for this and for that. But eventually you might say to yourself, you know what? These fools are going to realize one day this is not where we go. We don't know if Obama's sitting there thinking, thank you. You know, not saying that he's glad it happened, you know, this tragedy. I know he's mad about it. But I mean, he's saying, now I can really push through my trading cap. You know, I can do some of the stuff that I wanted to do. The same thing when the BP spill.
Well, he's not going to do any of that kind of stuff until after January 2013. Because right now he doesn't have a Congress to work with. I mean, frankly, even if he wins re-election, this Congress has lame-ducked him for the foreseeable future.
And that's my point. So he's probably not have to reconfigure and say, you know what, I can't get through the green stuff because I don't have a Congress, this and that. So what can I do? Well, maybe I can put an efficient government so that if we do have to build these plants, they'll be the safest possible, whatever. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that he's not omnipresent. He's not, you know.
Gary, it was not a bunch of Republicans who proposed massive taxpayer subsidies for new nuclear power plant construction in Georgia. That was Barack Obama.
And but listen here, I'm saying that he probably does believe, again, I'm not saying I know what he's thinking, I'm just saying there's a possibility, but he probably does believe that nuclear, because I think he does believe a lot.
Well, how are we supposed to know? That's the problem, I think, Gary. He may believe this or he may believe that, but how are we supposed to know? If everything is nuance and everything is 11 moves on 5 separate chessboards, how are we as liberals, progressives, decent people supposed to know? Because you know what?
You want him to tell the whole lay out his whole plan to you so the Republicans can figure out a way to attack it. I mean, that's not good chess. You don't do that. And I'm not saying that you're not right, that he's not doing it, but what I'm saying is that when Martin Luther King, I remember back in the day, when Martin Luther King was doing what he's doing, the black community was pissed off with him. Oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be attacking the government. You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that. Now they all praise him for all he did. The measure of a man will be shown over time, whether or not he made the right decision. He's going to make some mistakes. He's going to make some bad mistakes. Look at the Japanese government. They were the most advanced, supposedly, whatever, and an earthquake hit, and now they're, you know, the whole country's in turmoil. And so they made a bad decision. But back then, everybody said, oh, look how great Tokyo is, lights and 30% energy, and they're so efficient. There's some things beyond the power of the presence. I mean, there's this random, there's chaos. I mean, you can't just make everything in the future correct. You can't make every correct decision. You know, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but remember our conversation last night. You're talking to the guy who doesn't operate on faith. I don't do faith. Okay. I need concrete results. I need to at least have a hint. You know, tell me that it's bigger than a bread box and smaller than a camel. I need a hint.
Okay, listen.
And we're not getting any hints, but Gary, I hate to say it, I gotta go because I do want to hit some more of these blinking lights. But this has been a dandy, and we'll maybe extend it during next week.
Saying, don't criticize. I'm just saying let's just do it in a certain perspective. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not out here calling him names. I mean, just, you know, saying anything. You know, I'm adhering to the rules, Gary. I ain't said nothing about Mama.
No, you got the right perspective on it. You said we still got to vote, you know, and do what we got to do and. Just get the people in there we really want. And that's the main thing. So.
Yep, it's Congress and it's 2012, and it's going to be a booger of a struggle. You take care, Gary. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Bye. And let's do keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
You do call him names. You call him President, not sure.
Okay, I don't call him mean names. It's not like I'm calling him President Pinhead or Dim Sun or Dim Leader or, yeah.
A little humor before I start on what I called about. I see that the DSCC org has picked their slogan. Did you see this one?
Oh, no.
Submitted by Eric G. from New York, the winner. Can we have a drum roll? No tea for me, thanks. I prefer progress.
That ain't never going to fit on no bumper sticker.
Wait.
Not that anybody can read without there being a wreck.
Wait, it gets better. This is the rollout. This is the idea of how they're going to get money for this. The pundits will be watching to see if we've got what it takes to win. If we can raise our goal of $250,000 by that critical deadline, it will show that we're on our way to defending the Senate. And how do they plan on doing that, Bob? Give $10 or more now and receive your no tea for me. Thanks, I prefer progress. Car magnet. A car magnet.
Oh, stop it. I mean, how about no tea for me, I can spell? You can get that on a bumper sticker.
It's, you know, the problem is that... The whole slogan is just so, it's so corny, and it's just so obviously, nobody's going to pay attention to that. No, and when they look at it, they're just going to be like,
well, it also legitimizes the teabaggers. Hello?
Yeah, that's the other thing. You
the
know?
Single most illegitimate bunch of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, oatmeal-dribbling house helmet wearers in this entire country, and the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee just legitimized them? Oh, thanks, guys.
Yeah, I mean the whole thing with the whole thing with the Tea Party and how everything is just like when you were mentioning you were mentioning LePage earlier, and
your governor.
Yes, my governor, and that's a perfect example of how much the messaging has just been hammered and ramrodded through Maine like a lightning rod. And people do. I mean, it does resonate with people because it's so goddamn simple, but it's so false. But the problem is it's like one of those things when you say, well, it's not working for me, and then someone comes up and says, but you're doing it wrong. Try again.
Well, yeah, and see, I mean, yeah, because we heard that toward the end of Dim Leader's administration. All the little repiglickins came out and said, you know what, he was a terrible president, wasn't he? And we all said, oh, yeah. And they said, but you know what, that has nothing to do with conservatism, because, here, let us tell you, George Bush wasn't really a conservative. We just didn't know it.
That's...
Oh!
I mean, that's... I mean, when I was listening to what Gary was saying about Obama and the way people are being critical on him... the problem is this, is that the Democrats, I won't say Obama, I'll say the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is having a hard time, and they're losing, you know they're losing ground. They're losing ground with the goddamn poor, which is turning out to be us more and more, because the middle class is being eradicated. So soon the middle class is going to know what it's like to be poor. And here's the other problem. The other problem is that the Obama administration, they're completely over the hill for this fucked up educational reform.
Yeah, they watched Waiting for Superman and bought into it. Oh, yeah,
they bought into that. But here's the problem. The problem is that you can't hold these types of measures on teachers and educators. There's some things that you can't put down in this in a statistic paper, a statistic test. Or a survey or anything like that, and I know a lot of people on the Democratic side they bought into this, they believe that, and it's just a stupid GOP trick is what it is. And you know, the other thing I wanted to get to real quick is when Sandra said that the Republicans are crazy. No, they're not, and I'll tell you why they aren't crazy. They're doing this, and you know why they're doing this, Bob. When they bring up the Christians and the NPR, they're doing this. Because it's a wedge.
It's dog whistling, sure.
Yeah, it's a wedge, it's a doorstop, and then it stops everybody, including the progressives.
And do you know what that kind of, right, but you know what that kind of dog whistling is? That's a dog whistle to the fundamentalist community, David, telling them, preach about this next Sunday.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, somewhere at the First Apostolic Baptist Herpetological Seminary and Sanctuary and whatever, Preacher Whackbottom is going to step up and say, thank you for the hymn, brother. I want to tell you what it is when Satan walks among you. And it's Satan owns the liberal media, and there's no bigger example than that national communist radio.
Well, I want to
tell me it won't happen.
Well, you know what? You're exactly right. I mean, that's what's happening. I mean, that is what's happening. The moral majority that is, or rather, should be called the moral minority. They make America perceive that it is the moral majority when they're the minority. And the problem is that when we look at this and we continue to just write them off as nothing, and we just let them continue to speak, and we take everything, we say, oh, they're just crazy. And we start to question what they're saying, The problem is that it's, I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say here, but the thing is that we need to do a better job when it comes to, when this type of messaging framing comes out, someone needs to break it down and explain what's happening, and it's not crazy talk.
Well, and you're absolutely right, and I think you just did. I gotta hit it though, David. Thank you very much, and have a great weekend, okay?
All right.
Sorry to cut you short.
No, it's all right.
Bye now.
We'll talk later. Bye.
David calling from Maine. I got to get an email in real quick because we have a report from on the ground in Japan from our good friend Robert. He said, I got off the phone with my sister in Tampa, the one I had donated a kidney to, and she's a landscape architect. Now, it seems that Florida Republicans are trying to deregulate her profession and a host of others, geologists and so forth, so that any Tom, Dick, and Harry could say that they're a landscape architect and design parks or important infrastructure, never mind that it might be a poorly designed and might end up costing the city more in the long run. So basically, if you read a book on landscape design or geology, you can set up a business and advertise. Real job creator, you see. Next, doctors. Read a book on medical science, you're a doctor. Set up a clinic. Get the trend? After finishing the unions, they start on the professions, which is, in the end, a war on education. Why go to college if your degree and license is meaningless? She had said she would hang it up, as there would be no point. Japan is still struggling. Watched train after train heading north from here and over 300 trucks with kerosene and gasoline. People are freezing to death now. 14 people died last night. And they're hungry. One doctor I saw interviewed today said he had not slept in 3 days and only had one spoonful of rice per day to eat. Lines for supermarkets stretch for kilometers. My son graduated from elementary school yesterday, and we spoke to one of the teachers there, and she cannot still get her sister out of Sendai. They've stopped clearing the debris as there's no more oil and gasoline for the trucks. But there is scene after scene of people cooperating. The young people are now proud to be Japanese, and they are now very thankful for their families and life, which they had taken for granted. A sea change, in effect. Also, Bob, it will be a long, long time before there are any new nuke plants in Japan. I saw the nuke lobby in the U.S. on CNN go into turbo mode yesterday, so I thought maybe nothing will happen until some radiation actually affected Hawaii in a serious way. But then, Bob, I thought, silly me. You all had a huge disaster last year in the Gulf of Mexico, and how many industries and jobs were lost? And what? 2 months later, new permits were granted just after that hole was plugged. So no, Bob, even if people died from a nuclear industrial accident in the U.S., nothing would change. Sad state of affairs. Cheers, says Robert. And see, that's one of those moments. That's one of those moments out of the conversation I had with Gary. Those permits did not have to be issued. The moratorium could still be on. But bowing and surrendering to the pressure of drill, baby, drill, the permits were issued. you see. Onward. I think. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark.
Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Going good, brother. You know, I grew up in Central Illinois, and I was familiar with Peabody. Actually, Peabody helped put my father in federal prison. I'll make it quick tonight. Any case, you know, coal kills way more people with cancer and pollution from vehicles. Our cancer rates have spiked over the last 100 years, and when you're the oil country, you don't tell the citizens. You know, I don't know, Kellogg Brown and Root was in Vietnam, and so was Shell Oil, and Americans can't put two and two together, and I think Kellogg Brown and Root and Halliburton, that's right, they're the same company, are both in Iraq. I see Marine stickers all the time, and I'll pull up, and I go, I'm trying to act like I'm naive, and I go, is that your Marine sticker? And that gets them to roll down their window a little further, and I go, you know, from one Marine to another, you figured out what the war in Iraq's about, and they start laughing. Bob, the reason President Obama put the two nuclear reactors in Georgia, and the same, he's building two in Texas, the South Texas project. They signed a project labor agreement with 13 unions at STP in August, and the two in Georgia are being built by labor. Now, what his strategy is, I believe, just as a layman, Bob, is to take two red states and at least have some influence like he was trying to do with the high-speed rail. Here in Florida, obviously, we lost 24,000 jobs, but I would share with the listeners that the high-speed rail in California will create literally 100,000 construction jobs from Los Angeles to San Francisco via Sacramento. So, you know, he was trying to do what FDR did, and the country of no would rather stay in the 1840s. I feel sorry for the people in Japan. I lived in Japan. The people were always very pleasant and kind to me as a young 18-year-old Marine, and I felt much civility there, Bob, and I know that you reflect that, and I appreciate you. I don't find anything funny other than Haley Barber's fat ass. So,
Hear, hear to that.
Yeah, I don't know, Bob, but I appreciate you. I'll get out of your hair, but God bless you. And in the Supreme Court, I'll just make it the Supreme Court, if we don't reelect President Obama or a Democrat this time, the Supreme Court will make unions illegal. I should say.
No, I don't doubt it. They're insane. And, Mark, you know, I want to be clear. I know how I'm voting in 2012.
Oh, I know, Bob.
It's just that I'd like to feel a little better about it.
I know, and actually, the other thing about Obama, getting back to your conversation, and I was eavesdropping, I tried to call earlier, is that Illinois has 11 reactors. They're about the only contributor to President Obama other than individual contributors. So I'm with you, and actually, I'll just, we're building 500 of the windmills in California right now, and we're building a big union job, and we're also building just west of San Luis Obispo. East, we're building a big solar panel job, big 250 megawatts, so it's a huge one.
Can't happen soon enough, Mark. You know what I mean?
Yes, Bob.
It's where we've got to go. Thank you very kindly, and I wish you a very happy weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right, Bob.
Take care. Bye now. That's our buddy Mark. My apologies to the other folks who are blinking. I don't know who you are, but I apologize. We'll hit the ground running again next week. I'm on the road tomorrow, and check the Ustream channel on Saturday for coverage of the anti-war rally in Washington, D.C. I will do my best to get it up there. May not be the best video in the world, but it'll be there. Thanks to everybody who makes